Hello and welcome to From the Vault. I'm Christopher Gallagher. Today we present to you an episode of Timeline Celtic for the 2005-2006 season, which was first released in October 20th, 2019. Timeline Celtic takes a deep dive into a Celtic season, covering everything that happens in detail. Season 05-06 was Gordon Strachan's first season that had plenty of highs and certainly some lows. The Timeline Celtic series will be coming back in 2024. If you have any specific seasons you want covered, let us know. Thanks for listening. As always, the From the Vault season hopefully gives highlights of stuff you might have missed. Stuff maybe you haven't seen that has gone under the radar a little bit. We'll be back to a full complement of shows. Thanks for everyone for supporting us in 2023. And as we look ahead to 2024, get plenty of new ideas and some fresh shows on the horizon. So, without further ado, it's time for Timeline Celtic for season 2005-2006. Hello and welcome to Timeline Celtic. I'm Christopher Gallagher and I have a very strong timeline panel for you. To my left-hand side, it's Christopher Sormani.
Good afternoon.
How are you, sir?
I'm not bad.
Are you ready to rock and roll?
I'm ready to rock and roll. Ready to talk about Gordon Strachan, everybody's favourite Celtic manager.
Velocity. Remember that part?
Hilarious.
You've kind of stolen my prep, to be honest.
Alan Edgar, that's the voice of Alan Edgar. How are you, Alan?
Fantastic, guy.
Good. Yeah, good. Lovely. Good to have you here. And Barry Gallagher, this is your second Timeline Celtic. You did very well in the first one, so it's great to have you back.
Thank you very much. Looking forward to it.
Yep, looking forward to it. So, essentially, we are, if you don't know what Timeline Celtic is where we take a season, a player, different perspective, different part of Celtic history and kind of talk our way through it. This season is 2005-2006. So it's Gordon Strachan's first season in charge. It's the first post-Martin O'Neill season as well. And, doing prep for this and looking at it, my perception of it compared to the reality of it is very, very different. So let's just find out where you were 2005-2006. Where were you, Sormani? What age were you?
Same age as you.
A nice passive aggressive response there.
Quite aggressive.
2005, yeah. What would that have been?
22. So young, just
a nipper.
Just a nipper.
Just a kid.
And you were, at this point, you had a season ticket.
Yep.
We all had season tickets at this point. Yep.
Also, if you remember, it's come back to me now. A lot of the games were on Setanta and you could easily pirate the codes. I didn't do that, obviously, because it's illegal, but I heard some people did.
What do you mean, pirate the codes?
You used to be able to buy Setanta games on, you'd pay and you would type in a code on the screen.
Ah, okay.
I do remember that, it's just come back to me.
Yep, right. I'm sure that was this season. I heard people could bypass having to pay for them. Wow. And that maybe led to the demise of Setanta.
Yeah.
That and Jock Brown in commentary, I would imagine.
Oh, Jesus, Jock Brown. Geez, Jock
Mark Haley as well, I think. Oh.
Mark Haley. Awful. In terms of where you guys were, what age were you, Barry? You were?
I would have been 20. Just a young boy.
A young boy, Barry. You've made
young
that weird.
Young boys.
Oh, Bairn. Just, Alan, yourself?
I was 16.
16.
Still at school.
A real young boy.
Oh, Jesus. One of the real young boys, jeez. Okay, terrific stuff. So that's where we were in terms of ages. We all had season tickets, so we went to most of these games. This was the first post-O'Neill game, O'Neill season. The season before 2004-2005 ended fucking horrifically. Helicopter Sunday.
Use that expression.
Black Sunday. So we have to kind of put it into perspective where we came from. Martin O'Neill is someone that people of our age, he's our guy, he's our man. Alan, thoughts on the O'Neill era, brief thoughts, and just how it ended quite bitterly.
But briefly, the O'Neill era was magical, to be honest. It was the change in Celtic from the club we were to the club we probably are now. I think Martin O'Neill had a huge hand in that. Not perfect, of course, and the last season was, as you say, it was a horrible ending. But it was also this kind of sinking feeling when we found out that Martin O'Neill was leaving. You really did have this concern, fear that we might go back to the club that we were. And not there's anything wrong with that, but we had had success. We enjoyed success.
He raised the bar.
Exactly. And there was a concern that who do you get next? Do we kind of go backwards? And that was a real worry. Obviously, it was horrible to be losing Martin, but you were really worried what would then come next. I think that was the real concern was.
The fear of the unknown. Barry, yourself, what was your kind of take on that?
Similar. O'Neill just completely, I think probably because it was, so he was there from what I was sort of 15 till I was 20. So some of the best times of your life going to football. And he'd given us a reputation back in Europe. Never really feared any of the big guns that we played. And similar to Alan, you were just worried that prior to O'Neill coming, we'd gone through almost a different manager every season. I think a large part of his success was the continuity and been given the time. So it was just sort of worry what would come next.
That's an interesting point because we literally had, we went Janssen for a season, Wenglos for a season, Barnes for a season, Dalglish caretaker for 6 months. What was your kind of take coming out of the O'Neill era? And, you know, it was the end of an era, yeah. And was there fear from your perspective?
Well, as everybody said, O'Neill changed the mindset of the club. Took it back to what it once was in terms of an expectation of winning, an expectation of performing in Europe, which I've said in many podcasts before was nothing but a pipe dream for years for us. Yeah. So there was an obvious concern that he had this aura about him, O'Neill. It maybe did start to dissipate towards the end of this season because all good things do come to an end, but that aura about him, you had complete belief in his abilities at the time. So obviously it was concerning the future was going to hold.
You always felt like with Martin O'Neill, when he made a decision, you always felt, well, he's made it. Martin's made that decision, so it must be the right decision. Mm. Like, I'm one who completely bought into Martin O'Neill. I think we all did. Yeah. Obviously we're not going to talk about Brendan Rodgers, but if you look at Brendan Rodgers, looking back, so if I look back on the Martin O'Neill years, I look back at them fondly. As Alan says, you know, they're not perfect. You know, he's only a human, so he kind of, there's occasional errors of judgment, misjudgment, etc. But if you look back on the Brendan Rodgers era, there's stuff coming out now where you're kind of like, oh, for fuck's sake. Instead of him being this sort of guy that you trust, it was just all a bit of a facade in the way that I don't think O'Neill was. Am I being, looking back with two rose tinted eyes, maybe?
I think you're definitely right there. Obviously, as Alan said, there was things that O'Neill did get wrong, and he's only human, but I don't think there's anyone who would look back and think that the decisions that O'Neill made weren't for the benefit of the club.
Yeah.
And I know that he did go on and manage other clubs after he left, but I think when he was there, he was 100% committed. There was times that I remember he was linked heavily with going to Leeds United and stuff. But
Manchester United as well.
Man United, yeah. But I think every decision he made was for the benefit of the club. And I don't know anyone who would question his time at Celtic.
Yeah.
In terms of talking about when Strachan came in as well, you know, we don't want to go too far into Martin O'Neill, but yeah. Martin O'Neill had built probably one team. And that team was coming towards the end of its cycle. So not only did you have a manager, you know, you used the analogy of Brendan Rodgers. When Neil Lennon's come in, he's come into a team that needs additions, yes, but it's got talent and it's got young talent. We did have talent, you know, for Gordon Strachan to come in on, but we had a lot of guys that probably were coming towards the end of their careers. I wanted that last big contract, and I'm sure we'll come across that again, but it felt like it was just a huge change, and it was from manager all the way down. And you're inevitably concerned. If that was to happen now, it would be, you know, you try not to build one team to go and achieve. You tend to try and build continuity. And, you know, at this time, I think this was probably a huge change.
Yeah, a fair point, yeah. Do you agree?
Definitely. I think I've said it before as well. O'Neill took time to trust players. He trusted in players. and then he probably used them maybe a bit past our sell by date. You know, we made quite a few signings of guys like Stefan Honcho, right? And I'm not saying Stefan Honcho was a great player or anything like that, but we signed him and then he never really got a run. Janinho was another guy, the most baffling Martin O'Neill signing in memory. But O'Neill would buy guys, but he had a core group of players who had, you know, done well for him. And in terms of Alan's point about continuity, I think that's one of O'Neill's weaknesses. I don't think he was particularly good at that. The players that were the bedrock of his side from when he first came in to the end of his tenure, a lot of them were the same players, and I think that's because he put a lot of faith in those guys. And exactly right, at this juncture, the changes were quite significant from manager all the way down.
We're definitely going to move on to corner striking, but I just want to raise one point that people keep in this era, as in this season, people keep saying this is the best squad we've had since Martin O'Neill. Martin O'Neill never really had a squad. He had 15, 16 guys, and that was it. Whereas Celtic currently almost do have two players for every position. So we've got we've probably got our best squad right now. But to say this is the best squad since Martin O'Neill, we never had a squad. It was the same. Yeah. It was the same 15, 16 guys. That's what people forget. You know?
I always remember going to the games under the O'Neill era, and you kind of thought, oh, I wonder, you know, we've got big games coming up. Never. Nope. You know, rotation was wasn't it? But then it wasn't as common across the board. You know, teams did tend to have an 11 that you really would go with, you know.
Yeah.
I don't think it was as common there.
Yeah, just on that point, I remember around about that time, I remember Claudio Ranieri was at Chelsea and he was sort of vilified, called the Tinkerman, because he did see the benefit of leaving a few players out before a European game, and it was kind of laughed upon then. But football's changed since then, and I think just going back to what you were saying about the big contracts, I remember towards the end of O'Neill's era, he gave Sutton, Thompson and Baldy like ridiculous contracts. Like, I know they'd been good servants, they were in their 30s when they were getting 3 and 4 grand
a year. Yeah. So Martin O'Neill, the season ends, obviously we lose to Motherwell and Rangers win the league. It's horrific. We do okay in the Champions League, but we don't qualify for the last 16. O'Neill leaves and Strachan's announced. What was your thoughts on Strachan? To give a little bit of background, Strachan had been the manager at Southampton. He'd done relatively pretty well for them, got to an FA Cup final, built the club up, taking time, but built the club up. Previously, he'd been at Coventry, and again, that was a bit of a basket case of a club at that point, taken over from Big Ron.
That's a big name.
But so Strachan comes in. So Martin O'Neill, die in the wood Celtic man. You know, he comes out. He actually says stuff that means something, unlike that fucking. But Martin O'Neill, you know, talks about, you know, his father saying to him, you know, you walk over broken glass to be associated with Celtic, let alone manage them. So Martin O'Neill's a manager. Martin O'Neill is our guy. We completely buy into.
It's a good quiz idea. Who said this phrase, Brendan Rodgers or Martin O'Neill?
Oh dear. But so Strachan comes in. He's got no affiliation with the club. Obviously played for Dundee, played for Aberdeen, played for Manchester United, big Scotland internationalist. What did you feel when he came in? When he was appointed, what was your thoughts on Manny?
I thought it was an okay appointment at the time. That probably changed towards the end of it. I knew that the era of the spending, I mean, obviously, I know we're not going to talk about O'Neill, but we'll have to go back very slightly. When we signed O'Neill, it was between him and Hiddink. I mean, that was the two coaches of choice that we were linked with at the time. And Hiddink was a top coach as well.
Absolutely.
But I knew that we weren't going to go down that route after O'Neill in terms of the spending. It wasn't sustainable. So in terms of the candidates that we were linked with, I wasn't too disappointed with Strachan. My concern was that as a manager, he was more of a relegation specialist, really. I know he had got to the FA Cup final, I think, with Southampton.
Yeah.
But certainly at Coventry, I've never really had... You would never want to be linked, Celtic to be linked with guys who are go-to men to stop you from getting relegated. It's a different sort of mentality.
Tony Mowbray! Excuse me, sorry.
He got relegated, but you know... And there's guys out there who, you know, managers who used to make a living of coming in January to keep a club up and things like that. And maybe unfairly in my mind, Strachan was like that. But in terms of the choices that were out there, I remember not being too disappointed about it.
Yourself, Alan, your thoughts?
I think what was the key thing, and someone touched on it there about the appointment, was that it was in place pretty quickly.
Yeah.
You know, there wasn't, you know,
we weren't linked with lots of different managers.
It wasn't a huge shock. We'd become aware of Martin O'Neill's plans at the end of the season. And then, you know, pretty quickly after the Scottish Cup final, Gordon Stratton's, you know, we're aware that he's taken over. So that was good, because you don't then have the concerns. We weren't really linked to anyone else, as you said. So I would probably be lying if I said I was bowled over by it at the time. But, you know, you were obviously aware of who he was. He had a reputation, probably a mixed reputation, and probably not the same level as Martin O'Neill, but I think you would have struggled to get anyone and of that kind of pedigree at the time. So I would say probably the best description I can say with it, I was fine with it at the time. Not positive, not negative, just, you know, let's see how he gets on kind of thing.
I'll get your thoughts in just one second, Barry, but just to put into context, the last timeline Celtic we did, it was Dr. Joe Venglos. Dr. Joe Venglos was put in place on the 17th of July, 2 days before a Champions League qualifier. Gordon Strachan was put in place on the 1st of June.
And we'll have no issues qualifying for Europe.
Yeah, well, we'll come to that. But
that doesn't help your point now then. At all.
No, well, my point is you get him in the door as soon as possible with the hope that you give him as much, you know. Okay, it doesn't work. Fuck's sake, Alan, spoilers. What was your take on Gordon Strachan? Were you happy with the appointment, Barry? Was it someone you thought to yourself, this is going to be, keep us at that level? Or
I was quite disappointed, actually. As Alan said there, it can be seen as a good thing that he was in place straight away, but I didn't like the fact that we hadn't even sort of opened it up to others.
Oh, we'll get to that at some point as well.
We hadn't, again, it was straight after the cup final. We won't do that again, will we? I was disappointed because although we'd had the horrendous end to the season, I think our stock was still fairly high then. The money hadn't gone too crazy in England. And I think if we'd opened it up, we could have quoted better appointments than Strachan at that time.
I think Strachan was Martin O'Neill had played a hand in saying that Strachan's the guy to take over. I personally did not like the appointment. I wasn't happy with the appointment.
You just don't like his smart mouth.
I really don't. I never did.
Sass mouth.
Yeah.
I thought I you know, before, I remember, because obviously we got to the cup final, and I remember sitting speaking to my dad and just being like, see all this wee, I remember saying this at the time, like all his wee snarky, all velocity and his wee cheeky comments. See 6 months down the line, if we're struggling, or if he starts slow and he comes out with his cheeky pish, people aren't going to be happy with it.
Well,
and you know, eventually that kind of became the case.
Exactly. He did end up doing that. I mean, some of his pattern over his tenure at Celtic was, I mean, the Devil Dug and the Kestrel Lager stuff. It was just just brutal.
Aye.
But I mean, I suppose at the time, I think people, fans older than us, remember him playing in Scotland and disliked him. And I think there was a lot of animosity towards him because of that. Whereas guys our age, he played in England. You know what I mean? Yeah. We remember him maybe at Man United, but mostly at Leeds.
Coventry as well, yeah.
Yeah. What he did in terms of them winning the last ever Division One and things like that, that's where I remember him from. So I was probably less annoyed about him in his previous history, but similar to Alan, you were just like, okay, right, let's see what happens. You know, I don't think anybody was delighted. Think anybody thought that we've got a tactical, you know, magician here and whatnot.
Alan, you're going to say something.
I agree entirely. I feel as if there was two reactions when he came in. People that kind of said, right, okay, let's go on with it. And then I think there was people who maybe remembered him as a player for Aberdeen, and had that from the outset, didn't like him. And that, I mean, let's be honest, we all went to the games at this time. You know, it felt as if there was a thread that ran through Gordon Strachan's whole time. You know, and I'm not speaking about individual games here, but there was a thread that if things didn't go right, there were people who were very quick and were almost delighted that they had been kind of proven right.
Yeah.
And I find that idea, we've talked about it before, and we obviously talk about Celtic currently a lot, and we maybe say what we think or what we don't agree with. We say something, though, I love it when we're wrong.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I love it because if it means the team are doing well, then great. And I felt as if there were people who were putting their own kind of ideas before, you know, fans putting their own ideas before actually the team winning and, you know, cutting your nose off to spite your face, essentially. And that ran through Strachan's whole tenure at Celtic, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Essentially, that's Louis with Scott Brown. Thank you.
He just went.
Savannah just, he went to put his jacket on and leave her.
Yep, I'm hopefully he's listening, because Alan's discussion there about Gordon Strachan sums up you, Mr. McCaffrey.
Jesus.
Let's move on.
When they're not on the same podcast, they just barb each other.
You just need to nitpick.
You see. In terms of, well, let's look at some of the transfers that we brought in. In fact, you know what? We'll start. I'll just mention some of the people who departed this season. Ulrik Lursen left and went to Odense in the Danish Super League. £1.35 million. I think we made our money back on him then, because I think we only spent £1 million on him. Stefan Enshaw went to Wigan on a free transfer. Jackie McNamara, well, we can talk about that, went to Wolves. Husval Haren went to Club Bruges on a free transfer. These are all free transfers. Douglas went to Leicester. Silla went to Leicester. Manager at that point was Craig Levein.
Yeah, I was about to say that.
Paul Lambert went to Livingston as a player, but then became the manager after Richard Gough got sacked or left or whatever. Tony McParland
went to
Barnsley.
I remember he was a youth player. He was from around here.
The south side?
Mm.
Oh, nice. Did he go to Holyrood?
I think he went to St. Annan's.
Oh, fair enough.
I think he was about ages, whereas, but I don't think he played for Celtic.
This is riveting.
It is riveting, yeah.
Fuck up. Actually on this list, they've got, David Fernandez went to Dundee United. On this list, they've got Dewey going back to his son, Hai Shenhua.
See what we were saying about the last timeline when Boud was looking a bit rough? David Fernandez looked like that when he was on the pitch for Celtic, do you know?
He always just looked a wee bit lost, didn't he?
It looked like he'd been up all night drinking.
I remember there was a game where Fernandez was on the sideline training, and the TV camera pulled in on him, and he just looked really, really overweight. Like, he was just, he didn't look overweight, he was just really overweight.
Camera adds £10, Chris.
There was five cameras on him then.
Hey.
Dear, I regret that. Jackie McNamara, Barry, talk me through that situation.
Well, I remember that when Strachan came in, he said that there was two people that he definitely wanted to keep, and it was McNamara and Lennon, because he said they were leaders, and he wanted to...
Instantly making a barrier between him and Chris Sutton.
Yeah.
Genuinely.
Definitely, yep. He said they were the leaders, and those two could not leave under any circumstance.
Wow.
sort of built a road for his own back there. And I think that Celtic messed him about, didn't they?
So according to McNamara, Celtic were using, you know, we go back to the whole John McGinn thing about, you know, you're a Celtic fan, so you'll do what we say. He was the captain of the club. Jackie McNamara felt they didn't show him any respect. They offered him a really derisory offer. He was on his train down to Wolves.
Did he take your train?
That's what he says.
Unusual.
Yeah, exactly. So there's already holes in the argument.
If he's got a receipt.
Yeah, he's got a receipt for a few things, I can assure you that.
Jesus.
I don't know. I don't actually know. That's just, it makes no sense. But what he says essentially is, you know, I think there's an interview with Simon Ferry where he says that he was on the way down, and Lowell phones him and says, "We'll give you a new contract," but he'd already given his word to Glenn Hoddle.
Do you know what? See, your word,
Glenn Hoddle.
Aye, Glenn Hoddle, who's the manager of Wolves.
See, don't get me wrong. I understand you want to be treated with respect, etc. See me though. I have zero options. But even if, you know, it was between Wolves and Celtic, don't get me wrong, I would maybe play a wee bit of hardball to try and get more money, but I would crawl back up the road. As a Celtic fan, what he'd achieved at Celtic, And it's not as if, I wouldn't say Wolves is a great move. It's not one of those things where you're thinking, well, you know, it's
my last chance. If it was the Premier League or something, you'd be like, fair enough.
I'm just trying to play a bit of devil's advocate, because the interview that he does with Si Ferry is really interesting, very insightful, and he comes across well. But I sometimes feel that there's another side to these stories.
No question.
I remember being at his testimonial, and I was quite disappointed. That I know that
Ireland,
quite disappointed that.
Well, you were disappointed in the result.
I was happy that Ireland won. No, I've been disappointed that McNamara had a testimonial, and then within what, 2 or 3 weeks, he was gone. Now that he wears the blame firmly at the club, but to have that testimony, you would expect a wee bit more loyalty. And I know, I think there's something in the middle. I don't think that McNamara's completely right and the club's completely wrong.
I think the train's a smoking gun.
Yeah.
I think we need to find a receipt. If there is no receipt, then the story is a complete fabrication.
See, when it comes to McNamara, I remember him leaving at the time and I wasn't bothered.
I wasn't that bothered.
Because
either.
I mean, when you remember when McNamara first came in, he was this flying winger, and then we sort of converted him, and he ended up playing centre-half at some times for us, you know? To me, he was a good player, but nothing more than that. And I think he was on the wane, which his time at Wolves would prove. You know, he played his best football, and I wasn't particularly bothered if he left.
I thought his best quality was his understanding and kind of reading of the game. I thought he had a great, great football mind. But I think as he got older, I'm not sure that technically he was able to do maybe the things that
he thought, yeah.
You know, and that comes to all professional players. And I would probably be inclined to agree. I think we could have got another certainly very good year or two out of him. But I wouldn't say it's one of those ones. You don't look back and, you know, think that's huge regret. Yeah, it's not like Charlie McGrew or anything like that. That's the reaction I exactly wanted.
Moving on.
So Chris Sutton played a few games for us. He actually fractures his cheekbone against Armenia.
Did he fracture his own cheekbone to get out of there?
But he never played after the Armenia game, and he leaves in January kind of under a cloud.
He went to Birmingham.
Yeah, I totally forgot.
He ended up at Villa.
Yeah, because of Martin O'Neill. And then he got an eye injury again and gubbed. But yeah, so that's who left. Douglas leaves, Valharan leaves, Silla leaves, Lambert leaves, Sutton leaves, Henshaw. Lursen, Sutton, McNamara, Valharan, Douglas, Silla, Lambert. That's seven of the Seville
that's
team.
That's over the course of the season though, isn't it? Because
only Sutton leaves in January.
Yeah.
It was a huge turnaround, wasn't it?
Sutton played quite a few games. He played in all sorts of crazy positions as well, but we'll get to that. Sure.
Yeah, Shinsuke Nakamura, these are the people that we brought in. Shinsuke Nakamura, £3.78 million from Regina in Serie A.
Seen them coming.
Magic Zarafsky, who absolutely dominates this season in terms of just straight out the traps, fantastic. Gets an injury, never recovers. Adam Virgo. In fact, thoughts on Nakamura, Brett, when he first came in, Chris?
I was aware of him when he played in Italy, but I'd no idea how he would turn out. You know, he's what we got, what he gave to the club was phenomenal, but I had no idea how good he was going to be at the start, and, you know, in terms of culturally, if he would settle here and things. Talking about Strachan again, one of the biggest frustrations you've got is that Gordon Strachan punted them out on the left all the time. I mean, a guy, to watch a player like Nakamura and what he could do and technically and all that, and okay, we did get those moments from him in the team. I just always thought that the way Strachan utilised him put the chains on him a wee bit at times.
Yeah.
But what a player he was.
Strachan essentially said that he wasn't strong enough to play through the middle. And some of the comments that Strachan's made, you know, when he was a Scotland manager, you know, bordering on some dodgy areas there. So, Alan, your thoughts on Naka?
Just excited because it was something different.
It
also really, you know, if there's one thing it did at the age I was, it made quite clear that the kind of racism that exists in Scotland is not subtle in any way, shape or form.
No.
You know, at the time when Nakamura came through, it was just I just remember some of the newspaper articles, headlines, and a lot of the chat. It was just horrendous. That's the one thing that I remember from when he signed, to be honest. That's just exactly what I remember.
Barry?
I remember being really excited as well because, as I'd said earlier, I was disappointed with the Strachan signing because I thought, remember it was a Brian Quinn quote, wasn't it? Or was it Martin O'Neill said about Brian Quinn, it's Celtic fans need to get used to life in the slow lane.
That's right, yeah.
And I was thinking this kind of goes against that because we're paying almost $4 million for an attacking midfielder. I thought maybe things are.
Maybe they're just saying that to lower expectations today.
So been really excited because, like Sormani, I was aware of him from playing in Italy, and just thinking attacking midfielder for that amount of money, maybe things won't be as bad as I was fearing.
Yeah, and that's the thing, you know, even now we don't often buy a player from Serie A. So, you know, kind of exciting, kind of new. So Raski comes in for, again, almost £3 million. So we've spent almost £7 million on two players.
I think Nakamura would have been on a chunky wage as well.
Yeah.
You know, obviously we cleared out quite a few, but I would imagine Nakamura came and would have had a significant outlay, not just in transfer fee.
Yeah, absolutely. Zarafsky, love a Polish striker, I'll be honest with you.
He's no Brozek, though, was he?
No, unfortunately not, no. but he comes in, I didn't realise he was 28 when he came in. I always had it in my head that he was younger.
Really?
Again, you were just talking there about YouTube clips, and that's when this was starting, YouTube, where you could maybe go on and see players a little bit, you know, see a little bit what they were doing. Zarafsky was one of those.
Yeah, he had a brilliant compilation. I remember being really excited. And then, in contrast to that, when he did sign, I remember STV showed him missing a penalty. So wow. He had the best YouTube compilation you'll ever find, and they managed to pick out the one penalty he missed.
I was actually thinking that as well. Pound for pound, YouTube video to reality ratio, Zarafsky's my biggest disappointment.
Oh, really?
Because when I seen that video, I mean, I seen Effie Ambrose's one as well. And,
yeah.
You know, experience now tells you not to bother about it, but at the time, as you say, it was maybe a bit newer. And I thought, oh, what a player we've got here.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying Zarafsky was a bad signing for us, but in terms of what he brought, compared to that video, it was a disappointment for me.
2.79... 2.8 million quid, right? Just under 3 million quid. It's a big layout, considering, you know, we hadn't really spent that much money. I think Zarafsky, even for just this season, you know, you get the money back. But 1.9 million pound for Adam Virgo. Alan?
I'm literally, as you mentioned, compilations there, I typed in best of Adam Virgo, and there is one.
Is this the Motherwell game, I?
No, he's Brighton at this time. Adam Virgo as a signing was
odd.
Well, at the time, he was actually quite highly regarded. Now, obviously, I wasn't familiar with him, but everybody was really positive about him. Previous managers were positive about him. As I'm saying this, I'm starting to realise what's happened. We've been had, but he came in. The problem was when he signed injured. Now, you sign a player that's injured, and I think he needed some sort of minor surgery or something, but it was, they kept emphasising how minor it was, but he came in, didn't kick a ball, then, you know, we'll get to the game when he starts, but I think Adam Virgo, it wasn't a case of when he signed, I thought he's going to be awful, absolutely not. You thought, okay, you know, he can play in a number of different positions, allegedly, and you thought, yeah, versatile player, you know, we had quite a versatile squad, so you're thinking, ah, okay, you know, this guy can work.
Yeah, and the Mark McGee alarm was going off.
Yeah.
When Mark McGee said he's a really good player, you immediately assume the opposite.
He's shite.
I tell you what, some man, I know, his best of video on YouTube's pretty good. I think I'd do it again. I think I'd say him again.
I'm going to watch that and I'll be like, no, he was okay. You know, just unlucky for us.
Granted, it's one of the shorter ones. It is only 2 minutes.
Ah, Jesus. They're usually about six and they've got weird Euro trance music.
It's always in it.
Euro trance.
I like when it circles the player just so you're exactly clear who you're watching.
Wow. In terms of Adam
like
Virgo,
and subscribe.
I remember him signing. I knew a little bit about him because at that time, I still kind of do, but I kept a lot of notice on players who could qualify for Scotland. So I kept my eye out for Adam Virgo. And I remember when we signed him thinking he's a bit slow. That was the thing I remember most, having watched some highlights of him and stuff. But, you know, not the highlight reel that Alan was watching.
He's banging them in here.
He's lightning quick here.
Arthur Boric is brought in on loan initially. Dewey comes in as well.
Were they not quite open about how that was a cynical attempt to cash in on the Chinese football market?
Also, the Celtic, you talk about racism, Alan, the Celtic view, or the Celtic programme had a picture of Nakamura with Dewey at the bottom of it in one of the editions.
It's just a mistake. Celtic aren't racist, Chris. Come on.
I didn't say Celtic were racist. Just to clarify. Boric comes in on loan. We bring in Mark Wilson from Dundee United. I thought that was a fantastic signing.
Was that a January one as well?
Was that a January
one? I remember him playing, because he played against us and when we went to Tannadice, but that could have been August as well. So.
Yeah, he was brilliant. Paul Telfer, the Telf.
Yep. Sorry? Eddie.
The Telf.
Nope.
All he did was come forward and hit a diagonal pass, normally to nobody.
He had a shot on target against Livingston, I think.
He scored a really good goal at Pittodrie.
Was it a diagonal shot?
It genuinely was.
So was his goal, actually.
Yeah, diagonal at the top end.
He's like Derek Zoolander, he can't turn left.
But there's a lot of... And how can we forget? Clowning glory. Maybe that's the right word. Mohamed Kamara, who came free transfer from Burnley. He had a sling in his arm. His arm wasn't broken.
It's actually what basketball players sometimes wear. It's called a shooting brace. I mean, he doesn't play basketball, but that's what they do wear.
Doesn't play football either.
Now, you're out of order for a start.
That's offensive.
Disgusting. I thought he started well, and I'm going to maintain that. He did start well.
Wait till we watch the Art Media Bratislava games.
He was the first signing, wasn't he?
He settled in.
Marquee signing.
Did he?
Somebody's got to defend him.
Did he's right,
Adam Virgo has a football academy as well. Sorry, I've just gone down on Adam Virgo. I'm just going to close it.
He's got a football academy. Let's concentrate a bit more on Adam Virgo here. Where is the football academy?
He's actually a good personal friend of mine, Adam. And his football academy is producing tomorrow's talent.
So we've also we also still have Alan Thompson still there. I'll run through some of the squad. So Arthur Boric, Paul Telfer, Mo Kamara, Adam Virgo, Dewey, Baldy's still there. Baldy plays 33 games this season. Mm-hmm. Zarafsky, Alan Thompson, Sutton, Dublin comes in January, John Hartson.
Big deal, brilliant.
Stephen Pearson, Mark Wilson. Mark Wilson only plays 15, so I think he comes in January as well.
Yeah.
Jerem Aladeir comes Ali in. Adia. We should mention Ali Adeir comes in. We pay £1 million for a loan signing, which obviously a lot of money in those days.
I've talked about this concept before. It's almost like there's a sign-off level. Anything below it, we can do what we like. Anything less than 2 million, you can just do what you like. You've got carte blanche. Anything above 2 million, you know, it's
because the amount
of times over the next couple of years we just waste money on garbage.
Absolute garbage. Roy Keane obviously comes in January, but we'll get to that as well. Didier Gat, he's injured for a lot of it. He kind of leaves in the back door in January as well. Neil Lennon plays 38 games. Petrov's still here. David Marshall only gets a handful of games. Stan Varga, Nakamura, Maloney. Ross Wallace plays a few times. BT plays a few times. Stephen McManus and Aidan McGeady. Obviously, Aidan McGeady's had his kind of talks, and a lot of players have had their talks with Simon Ferry on the Open Goal podcast, and they've made it pretty clear that McGeady and Stratton did not have a good relationship. Mm-hmm.
So, in terms of McGeady at this point, just that he obviously, I always remember under O'Neill, he was always on kind of the cusp, you know, it's been there for a long time in terms of obviously. From a youth player, and then we had seen him, he exploded on against Hearts, I think it was.
Scored his debut,
And then this would have been the season where you're thinking he's going to really kick on now and become a huge, huge player. And he does contribute. He contributes a lot under Strachan over the piece, but this was, at the start of the season, I think the expectation was, you thought he was going to be the player that came in and did a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, he, so, and it was last season, He plays 37 games.
Mm-hmm.
This season, he plays 24.
Mm-hmm.
He finds it hard to get into to Strachan's team from the get-go. I don't think Strachan particularly likes him. I think there's a personality clash. From some of the stories, even from Aidan McGeady himself, I don't think Aidan McGeady covers himself particularly in glory.
I just think he comes across as a young guy that probably didn't know not to talk sometimes. I think that's what it is.
He's a young guy who's been hothoused. He's been told he's the best footballer of every single stage, and then he gets to this level and this guy says, "You're no starting," and he reacts.
It's easy to forget the hype that was around McGeady for many, many years before he even played for the first team. Yeah. I mean, I'd heard about McGeady from the age he was about, from when he was about 11 or 12.
Yeah.
People talked about him for so long. And then, as you say, when you've been told for so long how good you are.
You're the best.
You're the best. It's in
countries are fighting over you.
And let's not revise history. McGeady maybe didn't fulfil the potential that he was talked about, but he was still a fine player. Right?
Yeah.
And then to come in and contribute and come up against Strachan, I imagine it probably now, I don't know, I did see that Open Goal podcast, I don't know how reflective he actually is, but you would probably do things differently, but I think that's exactly what it was. I'm the man, I'm here, and then they just kind of came to loggerheads.
Yeah.
And that probably didn't help the team at that time.
No.
I think the form in this season, it was always in sort of Nakamura and Maloney on the wings, wasn't it? And
yeah.
Maloney had a fantastic season, so... Well, there was a personality clash. I think the fact that Strachan had two flying, inversed wingers playing in the form of their life, it was always going to be hard for McGeady, even if they didn't have the personality clash, I think.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm. You still had Thompson as well, so you did have options.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Mark Wilson comes in as well, and he's, I know he's a fullback, but he still likes to go up there. You get Stephen Pearson. It's interesting how... So we start this... We start pre-season and stuff. Let me just run through. So normally in these timelines, we give you the Rangers teams as well, just to kind of let you know where they were. They'd brought in a whole host of utter shite. Ian Murray from Hibs, Hemdani from Marseille. Actually, Hemdani I thought was quite good. Farfan from PSG.
Alan really does not give them an inch, does he?
he
really doesn't. He can't acknowledge that in any way that they're good. I agree with him.
Yeah. Julian Rodriguez from Monaco. Nguessin from Auxerre.
Danny Nguessin.
Yeah.
He ended up at Blackpool, I think.
Kyriakos, who was utter crap.
Oh, I remember him.
He ended up at Liverpool.
He ended up at Liverpool, that's
right. Actually, he did.
Big Jim Caviezel.
Garbage. Bernard, who was crap. Francis Jeffers.
The Fox in the Box.
I remember there was another rhyme about at the time.
Was it a bad one?
It was a bad one.
Moses Ashikodi, who Chris was saying.
Chapman legend. Chapman, we looked at his Wikipedia and
played
literally.
45,000 clubs.
He had to scroll down to see all the clubs he'd played for. But I think he made about one or two appearances for all of them.
Yeah.
I think he was a Millwall product.
Well, Rangers signed him from West Ham. So,
Millwall, West Ham, sort of same.
So they got rid of a lot of the Arvaladze they left. Just McGregor went on loan, Michael Ball, Morris Ross, Cashinus, really, Charlie Adam. Just a lot of crap.
Did they get rid of Michael Ball that season?
Yeah, he went to PSV.
PSV?
Yeah.
Who's his agent? Fucking hell.
But essentially, Rangers spent £1.4 million bringing in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 12 players. So they spent £1 million on Rodriguez and £400,000 on Chris Boyd.
Do we trust these numbers?
That's a club that cuts their cloth.
Transfer market. Transfermarket.com. Take up with them.
Via Rangers.
Is this in between?
Oh, do we trust them? Oh, yeah. Fucking right, aye. Cheating bastards.
on them.
They get rid of about 45 billion players and they brought in £750,000. Or was it?
Exactly.
Klaus, Rixon, Bernard, Buffel, Thomas Buffel, Marvin Andrews, Barry Ferguson, Alec Ray, Dado Purcell, Nacho Novo. These are some staunch players. Gavin Ray, Bob Malcolm, Cashin is really left, obviously. Chris Boyd, Chris Burke, Stephen Thompson, Alan Hutton. Alan McGregor.
Oof, what a night that would be.
Peter Lovenkrantz.
Thomas Buffel. He's the poster boy of the era when Belgium were shite.
Yeah.
Because yeah. I remember him being one of their most important players, and I think that sums up how pish they were at the time.
Absolutely.
I threw it out, I think, on the last timeline, but Barry wasn't here for that one. $10,000 on the table, Barry. You have to go for a night out with those lads in the Steps Bar.
Absolutely not.
Good answer.
Nah, that's scum. And in terms of, before we actually start looking at the kind of breaking down the season by season, what were your expectations? Obviously, we know what happens from a European perspective, and we're going to talk about that game, not that game, that tie. But what were your expectations from a European perspective? Martin O'Neill had really raised the bar. We'd been in the Champions League obviously we'd got to Seville. We'd been in the Champions League his second season. We got to Seville. Then we were in two more times after that as well.
Quarterfinals as well against Villarreal.
Quarterfinals against Villarreal, of course. And, you know, we punched well above our weight. We, you know, not winning any fucking away games, but winning all our home games, or at least not losing our home games. We had an incredible record at home. Expectation-wise, going into this season, yourself, Chris?
Expectation-wise, after what happened the season before, it was to win the league. European-wise, I expected this probably. I probably had an expectation that we would qualify for the Champions League. Maybe not much more than that.
Yeah.
But, yeah, we'll come to that in a minute, obviously. But I think, I think Quinn's comments and everything in terms of the players that had been the bedrock of Anil's success leaving, I don't think I had any further expectations than that. I think qualifying for the Champions League was about as far as it would have went.
Alan, yourself?
I think it was make the group stage, to be honest. I think probably just because I was a bit younger, you don't really think of it as much of the contextual stuff around it. So I don't really remember talking downsizing. I just thought new manager, a couple of new players in, pick up where you left off. You know, realistically, you're really worried. And when you think back, you're worried. But at the time, I think it was definitely win the league, because that was horrible the year before. But you know, it seemed to me that we could still, you know, we still had a good core of the squad. So, you know, make the group stage, and certainly don't collapse at the first hurdle, really.
Barry?
Same. I know we spoke, there was a lot of outgoings in this summer, but I remember after the sort of Black Sunday game, you go through those emotions where you think, just gut the whole squad. Way you just get rid of him, get rid of him, get rid of him.
If there's one thing I've learned about you, Barry, is that you are very reactive. Yes. Very reactive.
But we'd kept the bulk of our best players, I think. And as I'd said earlier, with the excitement of Nakamura signing, Zaravsky, a new goalkeeper, I thought slowly but surely we were building a sort of a new, younger team. And I thought, yeah, we'll make the group stages because we'd become accustomed to it and we hadn't really lost any of our huge players.
Yeah, so just we start the season with some friendlies, and these friendlies, listen to how exciting our pre-season was. Fulham 0, Celtic 0. Mm-hmm. Leicester 0, Celtic 0.
Rob Douglas in goal.
Did Baldy not break somebody's leg in that friendly?
The Fulham friendly? Or the Leicester? Leicester, oh, friendly. Yeah, that's right. Oh, who was that again?
17-year-old.
Aye, that's right, yeah.
Bobo.
Oh, come on.
Come on now.
Cheeky.
Don't be like that.
So Fulham 0, Celtic 0, Leicester 0, Celtic 0, Sporting Lisbon 2, Celtic 2, Leeds United 0, Celtic 0.
See, as a player, do you think they used to, you know, they were thinking, obviously, they're under O'Neill, they had went to America, you know, we'd been quite, you know, Philadelphia, Boston. You're going to Craven Cottage. Yeah. We'll get Leicester, Leicester. Know, at the Walker Stadium. Craig Levein's going to be horrendous. And we didn't win any of them either, so it was probably the worst pre-season in history.
So, we are drawn in the UEFA Champions League qualifier with FC Artmedia Bratislava.
Dodo.
That's probably what we all thought.
Slovenian champions?
Yeah. So, I mean, we'll start with Barry. Barry, your kind of thoughts?
Well, I was in holiday in Ibiza for this, and we'd sort of
loving it.
Befriended Liverpool fans by the pool, and they're saying, we're going out tonight because we're playing a qualifier. And they were saying, who? And we told them at media, and they said, oh, you'll win that 8 or 9 now. And I'm like, aye, probably.
Jesus.
Well, enjoy your night, boys. We'll see you, see you after the game. Imagine the traipsing back home after what would soon unfold.
Chris, thoughts just coming into this game?
We would win. There was no doubting about it. I mean, even under Anil, we had more than our fair share of away horror shows. But I just assumed this was a tie that we would get through. There was no preamble about them. It's not like, you know, some teams from like Cluj, you know, you'll talk about how they've had a good period or whatever. There was no recent European history in my mind about them. Or if there was, I never registered. I just assumed we would be better than them and we would win. So you can imagine my surprise when they didn't.
Alan, what, going into this game, again, just the same sort of idea that we'll be fine.
You're looking forward to seeing a couple of new guys in, and you kind of think it's... you take it for granted. I know people say, well, this and that, but you absolutely take these games for granted. We do, especially at this time.
So I'm going to tell you the team. So the team was David Marshall in goals, Telfer right back, Varga Baldi centre halves, Kamara was your left fullback, Lennon and Petrov sitting in midfield, Thompson and Thompson, Sutton, Hartson and Zarafsky. So Lennon,
Sutton would have played probably midfield.
Yeah. Narrow midfield. Yeah.
Lennon, I was thinking Lennon, Petrov and Sutton with Hartson and Zarafsky and Tom. It's quite an imbalanced sort of team.
I mean, look at the fullbacks.
Aye. So Boric is on the bench. McManus.
It's good to see the passage of time. It hasn't really softened this year at all, something.
So you get new guys coming in. Telfer, Kamara, Zarafsky. Aladair comes on in the 66th minute. Maloney comes on in the 60th. McGeady comes on after 17 minutes because Sutton has smashed his face on Lennon's knee.
So they're a bit of an unknown quantity, Derek, but at the same time, Celtic relying heavily on the tried and trusted lads who have done the business over the last few years.
Of course, yeah, and I think Gordon will have his information on him with a certain amount of tapes. They're not household names these players are playing against. And I think by the formation that we think they're going to play tonight, they play a 4-5-1, we feel, it shows that they do have a great respect for Celtic and a fear for them. But it'll be a difficult match, and it's a hot climate as well. But it's, I think, you know, they only have 4,000, I think it is, at home in their normal gate. I know it's at a National Stadium tonight, which holds 30. But they get through tonight, and then they're getting back to Celtic Park with a different case from obviously with 60,000 odd fans there.
Right. And a word from both of you, would you take a draw?
Very much, a clean sheet.
I think Celtic can draw it, but at worst, but I think they can maybe even win the game.
Three players signed by Gordon Strachan start tonight for Celtic. Paul Telfer and Mo Kamara, and up front will be Magic Zarafsky.
Yeah, it's a real attacking lineup, Paul. I think the full-backs are both converted wide players. I don't think they'll come up the park as much as they usually do, and they'll be left to Sutton and Petrov and Thompson to support the front players.
Hartson well defended again. And we do get... He's a ball across. Goes out. Angle ball is beautiful. Here's a real chance for Armenia. The ball squared across. And Gerard Hala scores for the first time for Armenia Bratislava. And Celtic fall behind. It was a delightful move. And the home team take the lead.
A well-worked goal. A super goal. We've been saying it all night. Rivaschak has caused problems all night out in this touchline. Super pass through and really unselfish there, laying it there. And an easy finish.
Well, Hama was brought to solve the goal scoring problem that Lais had had with his team in the early part of the season. And they don't come much sweeter than that to score against the former European champions.
That's a hammer blow for Celtic. Only 43 minutes gone just before half time.
He's there again. Little ball through, Arnaud's got him behind. Ball across, Marshall's in trouble! And so Celtic! The celebrations come from Bashir's first check. And our media are doing what nobody thought possible, and that's leading Celtic by 2-0.
Put up at pass again by Kozak, who played the first pass for the first goal. Lovely ball inside the fullback. Celtic caught a little bit square again.
Former Slovan Bratislava player
has enjoyed the return to his old stomping ground. And good of Burak, who featured in one of the matches he inspired. The ball comes across and in! An unbelievable finish! It was taken so quickly. We knew he was dangerous, Martin McCullough, and he certainly proved to be.
We've been talking about the corner kicks all night. And how they were a little bit strange. That one certainly wasn't strange.
You have to wonder why they've not done that sooner. It was perfectly executed. We talked about the nightmare scenario for Celtic, and here it is. What a strike past David Marshall.
Absolute class. I mean, the ball in for the cross was perfect, and the volley was absolutely outstanding.
Well, Halinar gets his second of the evening. Beautifully set up, and it's unthinkable in Slovakia on Gordon Strachan's debut. It's Armenia Bratislava 3, Celtic 0. Well, Celtic, well, they've an automatic qualification in the Champions League group. Last year, in the previous 3 years, they had to try and qualify. They were successful on two or three occasions. They lost to Bale in August 2002, and then they went to the UEFA Cup final. But there's no safety net now. McCullough comes in! It's horrific for Celtic! Martin McCullough, the Youth Academy player, scores! Armenia Bratislava cannot believe the night they are having here at the Telenor Paul Stadium. It's Armenia Bratislava 4, Celtic 0.
If you watch it here, once it comes up, Kamara has just dropped his man again. He's ran off Kamara inside, and it's a decent finish.
So the closing moments of the match, and Armenia still look like they want to come forward. And the ball over the top, onside. Is there a hat-trick in this match? There is! There's a hat-trick for Shilas Halilan, and the Slovakian under 21 may well have taken his side into the Champions League third-round draw. It's unbelievable in Bratislava. It's Armenia Bratislava 5, Celtic 0.
So we just watched...
Stracking out.
We just watched the highlights of the game, and this is something we're going to do with some of the key games just so we can keep it really fresh in our head. That's the first time I've watched it since the time. What's your take? What do you think of that, Chris?
Just appalling. Just Mo Kamara's positioning.
He started well, though, according to Garrett Allen.
Yes. I mean we read the lineup before it, looking at it. I mean, when Paul Telfer and Mo Kamara, your fullbacks, you're only hiding to nothing. But the third one, I know you've wrote third as a belter. The third was a great hit, but
he's got no one around him.
There was nobody closing it down. The rest of them were avoidable. Mo Kamara stood out like a sore thumb there for me. Marshall.
At least two, potentially three of the goals.
Yeah, it was really poor. And then obviously McGady.
McGady misses from... What you should do is, if you're listening to this, go back, go and listen, watch the game on YouTube. There's highlights there. They're only a couple of minutes, but I mean, how bad is the McGady miss, Alan?
It's worse than Van Vossen.
It's 2-0 as well.
I actually don't remember that at all, the McGady miss. I remember watching this game. This was like an earlier kickoff, I think.
It was, yeah.
Some of the goals are just... It's awful. It really is. It looks like a team that... It looks like an amateur team defending against a...
It's like Tony Mowbray team against St Mirren. That's how bad it is.
It's worse, actually.
Aye, it is worse.
Horrible. And you just always... Your mind always goes to, obviously, the folk that have travelled over.
Oh, really?
And can you imagine going over there? Bratislava, pretty cool city. Lovely, lovely, lovely night. And then you watch that. I mean, might put a wee dampening on your trip.
Barry, you're kind of... You mentioned when we were watching the highlights there that there was genuine talk, well, from supporters at least, about Strachan going.
Yeah.
This is his first competitive game.
I just remember thinking that, as we'd said at the start, O'Neill gave us a sort of respect back and gave us a bit of a pedigree in Europe.
It's like it was all undone within the space of a game.
And you and I, Gal, we said that we were disappointed about the appointment of the manager. And this sort of added to that. You're thinking, oh God, like, what are we in store for here?
Yeah, and that's the thing. I mean, like we'd lost games in the past, but like we'd lost, you know, under O'Neill we'd lost to Bale, but Bale would go on to get to the last 16 in the Champions League, and that would end up being a blessing in disguise because we'd get to Seville and stuff. We did dodgy performances at Champions League group stage level. There's no question, but never at this level before. Celtic completely, like we talked about, we've talked about recently about how in Rennes myself, Samani and Alan were on the reaction podcast in Rennes and we talked about how we didn't capitulate. This was the first time, like we conceded like two goals in the space of 2 minutes here. This was kind of the start of that sort of idea that if we lose a goal, we're probably going to lose another one and maybe lose another one. We conceded the first goal in the 43rd minute, which is, you know, you think to yourself 2 minutes before halftime, you get to halftime because Celtic were awful in the first half. Yeah. I remember them being just not being able to string 10 passes together, being appalling. And, you know, again, as I said, you know, Strachan was in since the 1st of June. This isn't like,
really,
you know,
stamp in the club.
This is the 27th of July. This is almost 2 months. He's almost in the door 2 months.
We all referenced the shirt we're wearing,
honking
in this game. I really think we should consider seriously, and I know that New Balance and all the sponsors etc. might not be up for it. See if we, for the first time, we wear like an away or a third kit, and we get a spanking domestically or away. I think there should be a clause in the contract that says it's done.
Done.
Every single one of them gets pulped immediately after.
It's not a book.
Well, I'm sure you could still pulp a shirt.
I'm sure you can pulp a shirt, as he says. But so, Art Media, 5-0. You essentially think to yourself, well, that's us gubbed. There's, you know, Nakamura hasn't had the chance to play. He's still, they're still trying to sort out his work permits and stuff. So as we say, Sutton goes off after, you know, I think 17 minutes. McGady, who comes on for Sutton, obviously misses the opportunity. You're thinking to yourself, bad start. Off to a bad start.
There's a great picture as well after it. And it, the tunnels or the dressing rooms are obviously downstairs. And it kind of looks like the players, Aaron Thompson, Aidan McGeady, Craig Beattie, Neil Lennon, it looks like they're all being marched down to their deaths.
Wow.
It's like a kind of gladiatorial scene.
Gladiatorial scene.
What I remember about that game is the latter stages, I was drinking Stella at the time.
Wow.
Which is not a lager I would drink these days. I've got a more refined palate.
Sophisticated palate.
I remember drinking them quicker and quicker, the worse we got and the angrier I got. And by the end of the night, I was sitting with my pal while we were watching the game. And you know that way where it was just, there was a helplessness, a hopelessness about that result. I don't think we can underplay how devastating that was because we'd had really bad moments in Europe before. But a team, an unknown team, to beat any team to beat us 5-0, you know, unless it's Brendan Rodgers in Europe in the Champions League, any team to do that to us, and it was just a hopelessness is the word that I can think. I don't think the support were in any way prepared for that.
I remember just feeling really numb, like not even like angry, just being like almost what the fuck just happened, like being completely numb and not really knowing how to react.
Drink didn't help.
No,
you really highlighted how bleak it sounded. That sounded awful.
Was awful.
Sitting, throwing down stairs like nobody's business, watching that 5-0, and then just sitting there reevaluating your life choices. That sounds awful.
Yep. I mean, I think we made many changes from that day. I don't think I touched Stella because I sickened myself off it after that. So there was some good to come in that game.
So that was our European debut under Gordon Strachan. So our league debut, we are away to Motherwell. We can only go up from here.
Listen, this was another terrific game.
So in goals for Celtic was Gordon Marshall. This was Celtic going to Motherwell. Telfer, Varga, McManus is brought in. Kamara
keeps his place. Correctly.
Keeps
rightly.
His place, of course. McGady, Thompson, wide with Petrov and Lennon as your central defence. And it's Maloney and Hartson up front.
Ross Wallace, I'm assuming, must have been the kind of only option as a backup. Because I know he was a winger at this time. I know he goes late in his career, he goes as a kind of left back. But for Mo Kamara to get a game after that,
honking,
Art Media performance, it kind of tells you that it wasn't strength and depth, certainly.
So this is obviously our first game in the league. This is obviously the last. This is where O'Neill's you know, title charge kind of went to die last game of the season. A couple of names from the Motherwell team, Paul Quinn, Stephen Craigan, Ross, no, it's not Ross McCormack, it's the other McCormack.
Cormie.
Brian Kerr, Scott Leach.
An angry man, Scott Leach.
Oh, yeah.
He looks an angry boy.
Scott McDonald, Jim Hamilton, and Phil O'Donnell as well.
Big Jim Hamilton, what career he had, eh? Bang average.
Bang average.
Petrov always a threat from dead balls or in the air. Thompson getting away from McCormack. That's a good ball in, and it's scored on by Hodgson. The old twisty 1-2 there, John. A fantastic cross in, must be said. And that man, Thompson, onto there to Hodgson. How many times have we said that over the past? One chance, one goal. That's the quality of that man there.
Well, it's Alan McCormack. I think he'll be unhappy about this. He was beaten rather easily there to allow that cross to come in. It's McCormack taking on camera. Good link-up play by McCormack again. That's Kerr. Very good play. Oh, it's a great goal by Motherwell. Ryan Kerr equalises.
Duel between the two.
He's crossed. There was Hodgson. He squeezed it in. The second for Hodgson. That looked to be virtually impossible to hit up. But Marshall is beaten again.
I think that's a bad goal for Marshall to concede.
Breaks kindly for Celtic to Thompson. This is Maloney. Forward for Petrov. Taken out there by Marshall. That's a penalty. Well, the keeper almost got there. The power beat him in the end. Celtic have a two-goal cushion just before half-time. That will ease the pressure. Started very promising against Telford, but it's found it more difficult to make an impression in the second half. That reaches McCormack, though. It's a good ball in. It's Jim Hamilton for Motherwell. Here's Hamill.
Incredible
for Quinn. The target is Jim Hamilton. There's no foul given. Hodgson wanted a free kick. There's the cutback. It's headed home by Kirimura for Motherwell. No free kick given that time. Beattie charging on. He got a touch. He's in the net. He scored. The referee's given it. Beattie has equalised.
So, yeah, so Celtic 4, Motherwell 4, Celtic 4. We've just watched back the highlights of that game. Again, first time I've watched them back probably since the time. Barry, your thoughts?
I thought the first half we played really well. Obviously, we go 1-0 up and then they pull us back. But Hartson and Thompson combine well for a couple of goals, and then we get the penalty and you're thinking, right, this is, we're starting to save a bit of face after what had happened in the midweek before. But then the whole defensive horror show from the previous game comes back to fruition again, and it's just seems to be a lot of cross balls coming from either full-back side, and we look really weak in the centre of the defence as well. So just the last thing you needed after what had happened Bratislava, in Bratislava. Yeah. Just doesn't allay any of the fears, and if anything, it makes them worse.
Yeah, so essentially Celtic, we get 3-1 up. We're 3-1 up at the break. John Hartson gets a hat-trick. Then it goes 3-2. Then it goes 3-each. Then Motherwell pull ahead 4-3. And then Craig Beattie scores in the last minute of injury time. What were you thinking at this point, Chris?
I remember the actual game. I remember very muted celebrations for Beattie's equaliser, because off the back of the Art Media game, that was a capitulation, but it seemed like another capitulation at that point as well. To be 3-1 up, maybe in different circumstances, obviously, but to be 3-1 up and then be 4-3 down, and it took a Craig Beattie sclaff to salvage a point, again at the stadium where things had gone so badly wrong at the tail end of last season. At that point, things really didn't look good for us. No. I had a real bad feeling about the season.
Yeah. Alan, thoughts?
Defensively, start of the season, I would assume this would have been the opening game of the season as well, probably a live game. It just doesn't reflect well. You've lost five goals against that media and then you end up in a kind of fist fight at Firth Park in the first day of the season. Not good. Not good at all. And you're also thinking as well, you've got up media on the Tuesday or Wednesday, whatever night it was, and Tuesday. You're immediately then thinking, we've really not got any hope or chance here because we can't not concede. And, you know, yeah, we score a couple of goals, but there's not really anything you can look at here and take solace from. It's going to let go. I think the equaliser does nothing almost.
Here's some thoughts from Strachan after the game. I don't think anyone thought we would lose that many goals. To concede as easily, that is hard to take. It's obvious where we need to sort things out, but it must happen quickly. I can ask the fans to be patient, but I'll just have to put up with any reaction from them. Defensively today, it didn't work, so we'll have to think of something else for Tuesday. And in an attacking sense, it gives us a bit of hope. We don't want to panic. Strachan refuses to comment on speculation that Bobo Baldi is a target for Marseille. Wow.
Off the back of a 4-4 draw, though, when you've lost a number of headers, that's a concern. Because
Baldi wasn't playing, he was an unused substitute.
Yeah, that's what I mean, though. It's a concern in terms of how you're going to keep goals out. It's really not the start at all.
We should point out that this is the season that Hearts really mount a bit of a challenge. They only really mount a challenge until, you know, about December time, and then we kind of take over. Hearts have George Burley as their manager. Vladimir Romanov is in charge and he's really pushing for the Champions League. And Hearts, actually, just to kind of put it in context, Hearts win their first 8 games. Won their first 8 games undefeated in 12. So they come out of the traps really quickly. Rangers, they have a fucking terrible season, which is fucking delicious. They stumble, and we'll go through the months as they come, and I'll give updates of where we are and where everyone else is as we kind of
how far the back Rangers get.
How far they do get far back. So that's the first league game of the season. We go into the Art Media game at home. We're 5-0 down. I remember walking to this game. I've had a few beers beforehand walking to this game, and I remember saying to my sister, I think we're going to do this, which makes no sense. But it was August night under the lights at Celtic Park. Magic can happen. Do you remember this game? You attended?
Yeah, I remember it well, actually. I remember, ultimately, I mean, obviously, we didn't do it. During the game, I thought we would. I think if the game had lasted another 10 minutes, I think we would have done it. I think I remember this is the point where Strachan realised he had no requirement for Ali Adie because Maloney and Beattie both were closer to starting for us than Ali Adie would. I think, you know, his Celtic career was short-lived. I remember he came on in this game. I was quite excited about it, but it was pretty clear that Maloney and Beattie were further ahead than he would be. Overall, I remember coming away thinking, okay, what's done is done. We salvaged a bit of pride there. I think we proved probably that all things being equal, and if we had a defence, we're probably a better team than them. I mean, I know that sounds daft after they scalped us 5-0, but even though we didn't do it, I came away thinking, right, sort yourselves out. You've proven here that it was a shambles as opposed to the team's crap, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So it was a bit bittersweet to do that. But, you know, it is what it is. The damage had already been done, you know.
We lined up with Boric in goals. Boric comes in. Telfer, Baldy, McManus and Kamara. Thompson, Petrov, Lennon and Wallace. played in this game. Hartson and Zaraski up front. Beattie came on for Zaraski in the 63rd minute. Maloney comes on for Wallace. Aladaiya comes on in the 87th minute. Goal from Thompson in the 23rd minute. Then Hartson makes it 2-0. Then McManus makes it 3-0 in the 53rd minute. At that point, you're starting to think, oh, we have a chance here.
Aye. And I think the thing that when you score the first at 23 minutes, you're going to think, right, okay. And then we score right before half-time.
Yep. And not long after half-time.
And at that point, then you're thinking, do you know what? This team are folding. Mm-hmm. I watched this one, actually. Me and my dad were in Letterkenny on holiday for a couple of days, and we were watching it with no expectation really before it, because I think probably because of the Motherwell thing. But that very quickly changes when you get those goals at those key times. It was the goal before half time. I really thought, actually,
you know,
we can easily do this here, because you're thinking, right, like, yeah, we've only scored two, we needed to get another few, but we looked as if we were creating a lot, and then the crowd starts to get into it, and actually it changes the nature of it.
Yeah, Barry?
Same. I was still on holiday for this, so you go to the game, a few drinks.
You're always on holiday, for fuck's sake. You are always on holiday. Fucking hell.
There's a holiday for hell after this. But I think having the two goals, being two goals up at half time, you're thinking, right, three goals to take into extra time in the second half. And it's, my memory's just wave after wave of attack.
My memory is Maloney missing a massive chance, then Beattie missing two massive chances.
Does Beattie hit the post?
Beattie hits the post as well. Right.
What were the Liverpool lads? What were they saying to that before the game?
I think every football fan in Ibiza was just laughing at us because it happened. That's the reality of it.
And
horrible.
That's why we don't like Ibiza.
Yeah. Beattie scores in the 82nd minute.
It was a good strike. It was a good goal.
Good goal, yeah. And then we pepper the goal. Then he hits the post. And then there's a chance at the dying seconds. And so we come away from that and we're out. Restored a little bit of pride, but not much. I think we've kind of been battered. We're out of Europe, so there's no European football. There's no fallback UEFA Cup. So here's some of the kind of quotes. Celtic captain, club captain Neil Lennon voiced his support for, and this is after his third game. Celtic club captain Neil Lennon voiced his support for his under pressure manager. I think everyone could see tonight that the boys are right behind the manager and we're all pleased for him. We only have ourselves to blame after letting ourselves down last week, but tonight there was quality, passion and everything you'd want from a Celtic team. Art Media's coach Vladimir Vis, I have never seen such an atmosphere in Elma. Fuck you. Dickhead. Essentially though, you know, for all the enjoyment of the game right up until the final whistle, because it felt like we were going to get that goal, you do come away from it and you think, well, it's the 2nd of August and we're out of Europe. We kind of, Rangers have qualified for the group stages of the Champions League. They get Art Media Bratislava in their fucking group.
Of course they do.
You just come away from it thinking to yourself, I just remember thinking, I wanted them out. I'm absolutely, completely reactionary, completely ridiculous. But I was just like, this guy doesn't have it. He doesn't have it to manage a club like Celtic.
I think the issue was, we talked at the start about what O'Neill had done in terms of making his, a legitimate force in Europe, a team that, really were respected again. And within months of him leaving, you've just completely collapsed and you're gone for the next full year, and you've lost embarrassing, lost to Art Media. The 4-0 win at home, as you say, as soon as the final whistle goes, you realise it's done. The only reason the atmosphere is great tonight is because there's hope. As soon as that's taken away, you're just left with the kind of mess that's there.
It's almost like the fact that we've had disappointments in Europe since, even think of this season, when you go out of the Champions League qualifier, you're gutted. But the fact that we went out of all competition. And we've sort of regrouped this season, we've got Europa League football, and it's quite exciting again. But the fact that, as you say, the 2nd of August and there's nothing but domestic football, it's almost unheard of.
There's a haze over the club, isn't there, Chris, when we're out so early?
Dark cloud.
Dark cloud.
For me, there is, but it was less about actually being out of Europe. as opposed to just the first tie. I mean, that as a standalone game, that still ranks up there with the worst moments in the football club's history for me in terms of that capitulation. I mean, the only way that you could have erased that would have been to turn it around in the second leg. I know that sounds obvious, but you know, there's seasons where we aren't in Europe, you know, where we don't go very far or whatever. So it's not so much about that, but it's as a standalone tie, people still shudder when they watch that. I mean, even watching the highlights there, you just feel it again. So I think that was a real black mark that hung over the club, if you will, from then. And Strachan had a long way, I mean, to go to kind of redeem himself.
Yeah, and that's the, you know, we need to get back on track in this season. However, we've got Rangers. So this is August, so we're into August. So there's been one league game. We're completely out of Europe. We've got Dundee United and then Falkirk, both at home before we travel to Ibrox. So as much as it's a case of, you know, you want to lick your wounds or you want to, you know, feel a little bit sorry for yourself, we can't let them kind of stretch ahead of us. Hearts are starting to really, you know, win lots of these games are starting to really kind of go from there.
People will be listening on when you're mentioning Hearts and people will think, yeah, that happens. It was different under Burley because yeah. It did feel as if actually this was a consistent side that had a good system. It felt as if Hearts were legitimate and then obviously they entirely imploded. So it wasn't a case of that's one of the kind of smaller teams just building up. They were, you know, there was a lot of talk.
People will look at Hearts last season and be like, oh, well, you know, it's, you know, it's yeah. similar to that. It wasn't. Mm-hmm. They were winning. They won the first 8 games.
Yeah, I mean, Romanov's talk and the money that supposedly had, although I think he collapsed a few banks back in Lithuania and things, but the way he was talking about in the finance that he was supposedly reputedly putting into the club, they played like Skatchel as well.
Yeah.
Now, he looked like a real top player at that time. So there was a genuine belief that it wasn't a flash in the pan.
Yeah, so we've got our next game, Dundee United. 1 point on the table at this point, 1 point on the board. We go to Dundee United come to Celtic Park. We beat them 2-0. John Hartson, fine form, scores. Craig Beattie scores in the 88th minute.
Smashing goal, that, actually.
Yeah, really mm-hmm. good. Boric, Telfer, Kamara, Baldy, McManus was your back four. Petrov, Lennon, a debut for Nakamura, Alan Thompson with Zdravski and Hartson. Very much a 4-4-2.
I think Naka, though, plays like a 10 in this game. I'm sure in his debut he didn't play wide. They kind of did play through the middle, but some man is right. He then, we almost always then seen Naka wide, but I'm sure when he started he played in that kind of 10 space.
Yeah, so we win that game. You know, we just want to win at that point. It's just a case of get some points on the board, and we do. We then play against Falkirk, and I'll just give you the kind of the team, because this is obviously where we start to kind of get stuff together. Alan Thompson scores 2 goals. John Hartson scores 1. Boric is there for the rest of the season, as is Telfer. I didn't realise Baldy was playing at this point. I thought Baldy was...
People assume he didn't play under Strachan, but I think I think you said he got 30-odd games in his first season.
Yeah, weird. My memory is that he played... I don't think it's the season after this, I think, is where he's kind of...
No, I do remember Bobo playing a lot this season, aye.
Yeah, so Baldy, McManus, Kamara, Lennon. He's sticking with that Kamara.
He has no other option.
Lennon.
He's fine domestically as well. He plays fine domestically.
Lennon, Petrov, Thompson, Nakamura.
It's a staunch defence.
I was looking around there for nods of approval, but I get nothing.
Nothing. Hartson and Zdravski. So, 2 wins in the trot. We're starting to get the feel-good factor back a little bit. And then we travel to Ibrox.
I have no recollection of this game.
Well, we're going to watch the highlights now and report back.
I'll tell you if I recollect it after I watch the highlights.
Recollect. So the team that we went to Ibrox, Boric in goal, Telfer, McManus, Baldy, Kamara. That seems to be the back four now. That seems to be consistent. Petrov, Lennon in the central midfield, Nakamura, Thompson. So Nakamura's on the right or Petrov's on the right?
Hey, I think Naka on the right.
Naka on the right. Thompson.
I think we played really narrow. I'm sure we played really narrow in this game. I mean, we'll get into it.
And Craig Beattie starts, Craig Beattie and John Hartson. So he's sticking with a partnership. It's either Zarafsky and Hartson or it's Beattie and Hartson. I don't know why you wouldn't just stick with Zarafsky, because I actually remember this, similar to Dembele. Zarafsky had didn't score a lot of goals as they started. But we're going to quickly watch the game and we'll report back on our rememberings of it. So, a lot happens in this game. What thoughts are, Manny?
Poor defending. It's the first thing that that comes to mind. I mean, from the Art Media and the Motherwell games at the start of the season, you can see, even Stratton saying it, that our defensive deficiencies are what we need to work on, but it seemed we still had a bit of work to do with that game. Positionally, not very good at all. Yeah, not a bit depressing, actually.
Yeah. Al?
Yeah, I think the one thing we've learned watching it is that none of us can handle watching us get beat off Rangers, and it doesn't matter whether it was 14 years ago.
No, it doesn't dull the pain at all.
It was kind of had all the hallmarks, a disastrous away performance. Alan Thompson sent off during the game.
Yeah.
Shocking defending during the game. I mean, we were looking at one there. I mean, the line, it's just guys that almost as if they've never played together. And then obviously Lennon after the game has a good pop at Stuart Dougal, I think. So, aye, just an absolute disaster. And at this point, you're starting to think,
oh, Jesus.
We've won a couple of games in the league, that's fine. But the real times when questions have been asked is were folding and discipline as well. I always think that then adds an extra element to it, because you then think the players are showing their frustration in the wrong way.
Paddy?
Yeah, just similar to what the boys have said there. It was just shambolic, really. And I think the discipline point's a really good point, because you're just thinking, like, are the dressing room together? Are they behind the new manager? And you just think we've got a lot of work to do this season, and there's not a lot of time left in the window to sort it either.
So the match finishes 3-1. They go 2-0 up. Mooney gets a penalty, and then they just give penalty against us just for, you know, even up essentially, because it's never
hard.
And so Alan Thompson gets sent off, as we said. You know, discipline breaks. However, from here Celtic go on a run. We don't lose again until November the 26th. We actually lose 1-0 to Dunfermline at home.
Yeah, I remember that game.
But I'm going to just talk to you through. We'll do updates of the month. But so at the end of August, the game after the Rangers game, we'd beat Dunfermline 4-0 at East End Park. So at the end of August, Hearts have got 15 points, Celtic have got 10, Rangers have got 9. Only the 9 points. Then in September we beat Aberdeen 2-0 at Celtic Park. We beat Hibs 1-0 at Easter Road, and we beat Inverness Caledonian Thistle 2-1 at Celtic Park. So in September, because we've only got league games now, in September we absolutely dominate. We also play Falkirk in the League Cup, and we win 2-1. The League Cup will become quite a key trophy for us this season. Scottish Cup, isn't it? But we'll get to that. So at the end of September, Hearts have got 24 points, Celtic have got 19, Rangers have got 13. October, again, if any of these games stand out and you want to talk about them, let me know. In October, it's just 5 league games and it's 5 victories. No, we draw with Hearts.
That stops their run,
yeah.
Yeah. Essentially Hearts have been winning every single game. No, they drew the week before against Falkirk at the Falkirk Stadium.
And we sign Arthur this month as well.
Yes.
On my birthday.
We sign him on your birthday, yeah, so that's terrific.
That was my gift.
So we draw one each with Hearts, then we beat Kilmarnock 1-0 away. We smashed Motherwell 5-0 at Celtic Park. We beat Dundee United 4-2. Chris Sutton scores. I said he didn't play again after that. He does actually kind of have the odd fleeting appearance. He scores an own goal, but he also scores as well. John Hartson scores.
Hartson always scores this season.
Yeah, I think this is probably Hartson's best season, like from a personal standpoint. He gets a ridiculous amount of goals and he's just very influential. But we're on this, we start to go on this run. We lose to Rangers on the 20th of August. Our next defeat's on the 26th of November. In between, we only drop 2 points, and that's against the league leaders at that point. So, you know, we're beating teams pretty convincingly. Nakamura's really starting to have an influence on the game. Maloney's having the season of his life. Remember the two wins in November. I actually have that DVD. Where it's the two. So we play Rangers.
Wait a minute. There was a DVD.
Yes.
Of two games against Rangers.
Yes.
Was peak VHS DVD. Would it have been VHS?
It was DVD. I've got it. So my cousin got it. I remember my cousin got it for me for my like my Christmas. And I'm like, it's just the two games. So it's not even like a cool sort of, whoa, here's the kind of player interviews and highlights. And this is where we're going. It's just, nah, here's, remember those games we won?
What was
here
the DVD are. Called this season? Oh, the end of season one. What was it?
Off target, the European campaign of Celtic.
Quicksilver, I think it's called this season, because we horse the league really early.
Aye.
You know, I'm a big fan of the official club publications.
Of course, yeah. Wednesday, 9th of November, we're drawn against Rangers in the League Cup. We've already put Falkirk to the sword. Expected more from that. I don't know why. So we play Rangers in the League Cup.
Petrov. Great touch by Maloney. He's going to go for the shot. Oh. Brilliant from Sean Maloney. What a goal. We expected a moment of magic. It comes from Sean Maloney.
I tell you what, Paul, it's one of the best goals I've ever seen in an Old Firm game. Absolutely outstanding. He's taken a great touch himself on the dummy. Taking it forward. It must be 30 yards out. And I tell you what, that's right in the stance. Fabulous.
Stephen Kloss is a top-class goalkeeper, and he could do absolutely nothing.
There's been no quality in the game, but I tell you what, there is now.
Nakamura, decent cross. Goes bundled in. And Bolivani scored. Celtic will be in the semi-final of the CIS Insurance Cup. They'll win the quarter-final here at Celtic Park.
So yeah, that's the Sean Maloney belter from 30 yards out. The drop of the shoulder, the cut inside, and just rattles it. What you think Kloss should have saved it, because you're a massive fan of Glasgow Rangers, of course.
Absolutely. No, I don't think he should have saved it. I think it was a good strike. I think you can see one of the angles, he's backpedalling.
So positioning was wrong,
he can't reach it. Whereas you love Stefan Kloss, and that's why you're saying it's a really good strike, because it wouldn't beat my hero, Stefan Kloss.
He's spun it around, he's made it.
Thought it was an ace, but actually he's returned it, and it looks like he's got a point.
That's tennis.
And of course, Stefan covered himself in glory with the next goal as well.
So what's your kind of... I remember being at this game and just... this is when I knew that we had the mark over them, because they just weren't very good.
I remember this one as kind of thinking... It was pretty emphatic. We just kind of ran over the top of them.
Yeah.
And then obviously you knew that you've got them again. So I remember thinking that Europe's gone, of course, but you're in a good run. And now this will define how the season goes in terms of, can you run over the top of them and really, because their results are sketchy as well. So, and to win 2-0 pretty comfortably, cracking goal from Molyneux though, I have to say.
I
don't really remember the Bobo / Stefan Kloss goal a great deal.
Yeah, the Baldy one, he just kind of forces it over the line. Yourself, Barry?
Yeah, just sort of giving us a bit of confidence back. I know that we'd gone on a good run against all the other plankton, but...
Love it.
We managed like an hour without saying plankton. That's pretty good.
And it was the first time that I thought, right, maybe Strachan can do a job in a big game. And I was going to say it's probably the worst Rangers team in living memory, but then things would happen in the coming years that would well surpass this.
So that was the Wednesday, 9th of November. That was the League Cup. Our next game is also against Rangers in the league. This is a weird month, November, because we absolutely decimate Falkirk 3-0 away from home. We beat Rangers.
As that stadium's horrible at this time as well, so I don't think it's fully developed.
2-0, put Rangers at the League Cup. We play them in this game and we beat them 3-0. We'll talk about it in a second, but we beat them 3-0. And then we lose to Dunfermline 1-0. At Celtic Park. I'm going to have to remind myself of that game because I don't remember. Do you remember that, Samani? Oh, in fact, let's focus on the Rangers game. So this is when we beat them with 3-0.
So Langwood and Culture in possession. Former captain of Marseille. That's a careless one by Hutton. A chance for Nakamura to break on Celtic. Here's Maloney with a chance. That's Hutton! A perfect start for Celtic! Goal number 101 for John Hutton. That's how lethal that man is. Clinical. Some say that could have been a tap-in, but it's coming across at the fair rate or not. Only one outcome. Kyriakos to Andrews. Purcell trying to play that into the path of Ferguson, who's done well, and so too has Buric. That's terrific goalkeeping.
Fantastic goalkeeping from Buric. Another mistake there.
Demonstration of good possession play. Here's Telfer. Really off from Petrov. Here's Maloney now. And an excellent tackle by Rickson. Top class goal by play by Rickson.
Yeah, super play from Celtic as well. Calm passing. Must have been a dozen, 15.
Swinging again. Met by Hamdani. Here's Nakamura on score. Oh, that's great play by Nakamura. And a header is in by Baldy!
Sensational play, sensational cross, and a super finish there. Nakamura at his very, very best. And if you want a man on the end of the cross, 6 yards out, no better man than that man there, Baldy.
Well, that's a terrific play by Celtic. Nakamura in particular showed great ability to set this up. Just look at the patience he demonstrates here. Is Kyriakos, now Murray losing out very easily to Nakamura. Well, that's good play again from Celtic. It's Petrov waiting for Telfer to offer an option. And that's the front! McGeady!
Great crossing again, but you must pass the cross in the goalkeeper. It's a tame effort. McGeady getting himself in there. He's had a super game. Changed the position.
So we just watched the highlights of that game, and a lot of things come starkly into the front of your mind. Firstly, how great Nakamura was in this game.
Yeah,
he was really, really good. He wins the ball. He's getting a dig, and he's winning the balls back in midfield. He's doing no look passes.
The one time that he won the ball back in the middle of the field.
Shut up.
I love Naka, just to clarify.
No-look passes, and he just takes control. I remember this game now that I've seen the highlights. It's one of those where as soon as you watch them, it's just like right back into the front of your mind. Chris, thoughts?
Much the same as you. It didn't immediately come to mind, but then watching it back, I can remember it really clearly. Nakamura was excellent in this game as well. And when we were watching the highlights there, Boric's one-handed save.
Yeah,
he takes it. Who is it? He takes the ball from in the box.
I think it's part. Is it Purcell or
Buffel, Purcell? Oh, yeah. Whatever you like. Which one do you not like the most?
But obviously going through and going. Obviously when a keeper dives at a player's feet, you know it's a dangerous thing to do. But the fact he takes the ball away and it looks as if whoever it was didn't even realise till after he'd ran past them. It was fantastic. The difference that Boric made in terms of confidence. I think it's important to mention that Marshall in for the first two games, then we get Boric in. The difference he made in terms of confidence was unreal, and this was obviously peak fitness Arthur Boric before he starts getting tore into before he's conditioned, takes a wee turn for the worse. He was phenomenal, absolutely
well navigated there.
Yeah. Yes. Remember the two wins in November. What do you remember about this game, Alan?
knacker, to be honest. Just having the guile, the ability. Just, if you ask me about Strachan's time, the one player that I would always talk about is Naka. He just had the ability to make things happen. And I think this is probably one of his better performances. Probably more subtle in a lot of ways, but this was when he's just such an influential playmaker. I've told you a lot about things that I like when we beat Rangers. One of them being, I like it when a Rangers goalie makes an absolute...
Arse of it.
I love that. Can't get enough of that. What I also like, though, and we've seen it and just in that wee clip there, Naka, ability to go both sides, but we know he prefers his left. Just that nice wee feint, oh, I'm going to whip it in with my right. Defender swallows it up entirely, commits, and then Naka just drags it on his left.
Do you know what?
Beautiful.
That reminded me of Lubomir Marafchik. And at the time, I remember seeing him, you know, the drop of the shoulder, you think he's going to put it in, and he doesn't. And I remember thinking, oh, I wasn't comparing Naka to Lupo. What I was saying is we might have the same sort of player.
In terms of defending against that as well, it's really difficult because you're thinking, well, don't dive in, but he can quite easily cross it with his right. I know he was very... He was exceptional with his left foot, but he was comfortable receiving the ball both sides. And that's why players like that, you don't get guys like that often, because they're just... They've got so many facets to the game, and he was just glorious, and he was great in this game.
Barry?
Just the one thing I took from us, I know it was a goalkeeping error, but it was great for McGeady to get off the mark against Rangers. And the game before Maloney, so it was good to have two of our own homegrown attacking players getting off the mark against Rangers and really starting to put their stamp on the team.
Yeah, exactly. So Hartson scores in the 14th minute with a really well-worked goal. Rangers are all over the place, as Alan pointed out as we were watching that there. Baldy scores a cracking header in the 56th minute, and the game's over at that point. Mm-hmm. And then McGeady scores 5 minutes later, and this point you start to realise just how crap Rangers are. Like, they're far behind us in the league, and we actually, just to kind of give an update of where we were at the end of November, we actually dropped 3 points by losing at home to Dunfermline 1-0, and we're still... Celtic have got 38 points and Rangers have got 23.
I mean,
that's 15 points clear at this point.
How will McLeish get a job after this?
But Hearts have got 37 points. So Hearts are right behind us. We're neck and neck with Hearts when we're playing well. And this is the start of December.
I was going to say that there. You're talking about Rangers and how poor they were this season as well. But at the same time, just looking at the results and stuff like that, the level of consistency, that we put together was really strong. I mean, Hearts were a good few points ahead of us earlier in the season.
Yeah.
But I think pretty shortly we overtake them, and I think the consistency of us is really something this season.
Yeah.
I think the other thing that really, just looking at it and looking back as well, is Barry mentioned about this Rangers team. And when you look at it, I mean, Juarez, Rixon, Marvin Andrews, Kyriakos, Alan Hutton, Hemdani, Ferguson, Ian Murray, Franny Jeffers and Hamed Namuchi, and then Puzzle up front, replaced by Stephen Thompson. That's probably as poor a Rangers team as you'll get in this era, and there's some really poor ones.
Yeah. So, as I say, we dropped points to Dunfermline at home, which is mental. I don't remember that game. I'm trying to...
15 minutes in or something they scored.
I'm trying...
It was one of those
I definitely
games.
Would have been at it, but, you know, it's just one of those. Yeah. I've looked at the hat, you know, it's just... But anyway, so...
I remember their goal. I don't remember much else about it.
So, the end of November, Celtic 38 points, Hearts 37, Rangers 23. I mean, they're out of the title race already at this point. I mean, it's embarrassing. So December, we've got 4 league games.
Is that just a burst of joy?
I just love it. I just love it when they collapse. It takes so much. You know, people obviously don't like when you're obsessed. See, when Rangers collapse, anytime they get beat, I love it.
Yeah.
I love it.
So we've got 4 games in December. They're all league games because... you know, we're through at the semi-finals of the League Cup, but we don't have the Scottish Cup yet. That comes in January, and boy, does it come.
Looking forward to that.
Aberdeen, we beat them 3-1 away at Pittodrie. We beat Hibs 3-2 at home. We draw 1 each with Inverness, and we beat Livingston. So we're not dropping many points here as well. That's we're not dropping points regularly. It's just the odd draw here or there.
I think what you start to see as well, I know we're obviously kind of going through a couple of the games, but the side starts to really kind of settle down in terms of
that back five really starts to be consistent.
And it's more as well that, you know, Craig Beattie contributed a lot. I mean, you look back, he did score quite a few goals at the start of the season, but he's then kind of phased out, and it's Maloney, McGeady, guys like that, that really start to come in and make an actual tangible impact.
Yeah, even there was guys at the start of this season that were at the club who didn't. I mean, the likes of Maloney and the likes of Boric and Nakamura coming in. Those early games that were a disaster, they weren't there. But as you say, the mainstays of the squad are firmly fixed just now. This is Maloney's breakout season, and you can see the impact that he had on the team.
Yeah.
So the team started to settle down, probably as Strachan realised who are the players he could trust going forward.
Yeah.
So
very similar almost to Anil in that sense, in that he really had to do what he wanted. You know, he didn't really like Maverick kind of players, you know, players that or he didn't allow too many in the team. He liked trusting guys and, you know, consummate professionals. He was very
steady. Paul Telfer.
Right, good teammates. That's what he likes. He likes right good teammates. Barry?
Yeah, just to sort of back up what the boys are saying, like the midfield to front, I think it's a really good Celtic team, because you've got Lennon and Petrov in the centre, Maloney and Nakamura, McGeady coming in and out, and
John Hartson rattling the goals,
and then Zdravsky as well. So, and Boric at the back. Obviously, the defence isn't as you'd like, but they're getting results.
Yeah.
Which is what we want.
And that's the thing. So this timeline's a little bit differently, because we can't go over every single game because we're out of Europe. We don't have any European stuff to fall back. But we're going to talk about now one of my favourite experiences of watching Celtic from a contemporary standpoint. Celtic versus Hearts of Midlothian on the 1st of January, 2006. Tyne Castle, 2 o'clock kickoff. So at this point in our timeline journey, we decided to change things up a little bit, and instead of watching the highlights separately, we did a sort of watch along. So we are watching Hearts 2 Celtic 3 from New Year 2006. There's a link in the accompanying article to the YouTube clip, so you can watch along with us, or you can just hear us. It works fine just listening to us watching the game, because you can hear the commentary in the background. So it's really up to you. It's really your choice. So, Celtic 2, Hearts 2, Celtic 3.
Tyne Castle.
Horrible.
Just horrible.
Scatcho.
That was a good term.
look at
Lenny Tona Caravan there behind.
Boric.
Oh, Jesus. No.
That's pretty fair.
Look at him celebrating in front of us.
Little does he know what's going to happen. Paul Telfer was really shite.
I tell you what, those Celtic fans sitting there have been very respectful
to Rudy
Scatcho for it being Tyne Castle.
Maybe hungover from New Year.
Yeah. Oh, Jesus, the defending is absolutely honking. Fucking grizzly. he'd find out.
There he is.
There he is. Winston Churchill with giving it the V sign there.
That was Romanov.
Oh, Pirro. Pirro changed the game when he came in.
He did. He absolutely did. Jeez, I forgot about Pendry's tash.
Can we identify that Gary Pendry has a very strong tash at this time? It's,
looks a bit like my dad, actually.
It looks like one of the priests in Father Ted. Not your dad.
He does as well.
Petrov coming off for Pearson. Look at David Marshall on the bench. Just look at him. I've got nothing to add.
Easy face.
Nothing to add more. Touch from Hartson. Pirro.
That was good, yep. Yeah. Good run.
Maloney. Comes on, instant impact.
Great ball from Maloney.
Oh, caught in the net.
Is that your contribution, eh?
I prefer it when it's Rangers players, but I will accept others, eh?
Great ball in by Maloney, by the way.
You can tell the real desire from him though.
Yeah. It never really worked for Pearson.
Hearts rocking a behind the goal camera there quite early on. Mm. They're not known as a progressive club, but well, that's quite impressive.
Look at Presley's big gommy face.
Oh yes.
Naka. This is McManus, right? McManus goes the last two.
I think it's
McManus,
two, yeah.
McManus. Yeah. Aye.
It's the equaliser.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Get a celebration as well. That's a stern
That's a workmanlike celebration.
that's a man who never expected to score. That's what that is.
Oh, what a delivery. Ah,
that's Nakamura, man. Just super.
Presley and his heels.
Boom. So that was it. And then the 92nd minute.
I'd have been happy with a point here, eh?
You'd be delighted with a point.
Yeah, yeah.
Did we just find him up here? Or did we get a...
I thought it was a corner.
Foul, yeah. Oh, no, it's a foul.
Do you remember the backlash over this foul?
It was off the soft variety, is what they said.
He pushes him.
He pushes him now.
Pushes him over. Ball comes in.
Oh, lovely. Twinkle toes.
I just love seeing that celebration.
Absolute bedlam.
It trinkles over the line. Where did you watch the game, Simon?
Pub. Where was it? It might have been the cafe.
I watched in the cafe as well. Were we there and we didn't even...
We weren't there and we didn't even hug.
Oh my God. But yeah. Baldy, it ricochets and the keeper. I don't know what the keeper...
Brilliant.
It's Craig Gordon, that's right. Fucking hell, big lanky prick.
Wasn't going up for a corner.
Oh,
here.
He's not laughing now, is he?
No.
Romanov.
Are we fold a bank?
It's about this time that he's starting to think I've made a huge mistake.
He's Job from Arrested Development. So there you go. We watched the game there. You might want to watch it while you listen to us talking. I'll put a link in the article that goes with this. So have a look there, and we'll do that for the rest of the games as well. That was, for me, one of the most just fantastic Celtic watching experiences I've had in a long time. Because we were 2-0, we were not playing well. Hearts were playing really, really well. And then that Pearson substitution changes it. Barry, your thoughts?
Yeah, I think just Pearson's sort of direct running and just desire to make things happen. He lays the ball off to Maloney and then he gets on the end of it. Just brilliant to see. It was never sort of spoke when we were watching it. It was never a player who had a fantastic Celtic career, but just that sort of gallousness and desire to get on the end of a cross completely changed the game for us.
Yeah. Telfer, Ross Wallace actually started, so your man's missing, Alan. Kamara, oh. Unlucky. Baldy McManus. As we say, the team starts to really become itself. There's the odd change at the back, but Hartson, Maloney, Thompson, Nakamura, Lennon, Petrov, McManus and Baldy are centre-halves, Wallace and Telfer with Boric in goal.
What's kind of clear from that team is the amount of Anil era players that are sitting still in there. You've got Baldy, Petrov, Lennon, Thompson and Hartson. I think there was an assumption that a lot of them were cast aside.
Yeah.
But
interesting.
Just an observation.
What were your take on the game?
The Pearson, up until the Pearson substitution, which would have been, and it says 51 minutes. Does he come on? Is it half time or is it?
No, just after half time.
Just after half time.
51 minutes.
No, he scores in 51 minutes.
I apologise.
That's fine. That is just after half time. So the Pearson substitution galvanises the side. When we're watching the they're still laughing at me. When it comes on, you can see the desire to get the goal. And then the whole momentum changes after that. I think we're forcing back and it looks as if they're going to hold out. I think you'd said it earlier, Barry. See when McManus equalises, you'd take that.
Yeah.
You'd take that immediately. But then...
Because we're 4 points ahead of them. So if they win this, they're only a point behind.
Yeah.
So it's really, you know, who knows how it would have shifted after that.
But the best thing is, and when we talked about it briefly there, is the outcry over Nakamura for the foul.
Yeah.
Now, Hartley pushes him over. It's a foul, right?
Yeah.
But...
back to those old traits of foreigners diving and soft.
That's exactly what it is.
We hear this loads over Nakamura's time as well. Yeah. You know, St Mirren
goes down easy.
The goal with the Man United free kick as well. Do you know what I mean? I mean, if he's going, he's right to do that. See if somebody puts his hand on him, it goes down or whatever. It's a foul. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
What's he meant to do?
Yeah,
so
that's it. Stephen McManus scores the header 97 minutes in, as you guys say, you're happy with that. But 2 minutes later, this sclaffed shot, you went mental, Alan.
Just to get a late winner's great, but to get a late winner right off the back of a late equaliser, you're kind of struggling to think of any much more scenarios where you've been in that position, you know, where you snatch victory from the jaws of defeat. You know, it's just incredible.
Yes. Yeah. We saw if you go on to the Paul Hartley and Simon Ferry interview, Paul Hartley talks about how if that team had stayed together and they hadn't got rid of George Burley, they would have won the league. They wouldn't have. George Burley, they just fucking wouldn't have.
No,
they wouldn't have.
They just wouldn't have. I mean, they're 4 points. So Burley goes in October. Graham Ricks is appointed, and I don't know.
Nothing to add there.
Nothing to add there.
There are no jokes.
There are no jokes. You know, we go top of the league in October, and then we just stay top of the league. You know, they're saying, you know, by the time that Burley leaves, we're ahead of them. So there's this myth that Celtic Hearts might have won the league. You know, they might have had a stronger second than they did, but, you know, Burley goes on the 22nd of October, Graham Ricks is appointed on the 8th of November. This point, we win this game.
Sorry, can I interrupt there? They have from the 22nd of October until the 8th of November, and they still appoint Graham Ricks?
Yeah.
Okay.
So
that's absolutely fine.
At the end of December, we are 4 points clear. This makes it 7. Now, the league isn't over. Mathematically,
that's the day the league was won.
But that's pretty much the day the league was won.
If you just think of what would happen if they had won that,
with one point in it, and
who knows what would have happened. But I think just giving us that wee boost to start the year, going 7 points clear, and the manner that which we did it, I think the manner is more important than the 3 points. Just being 2-0 down so early in the game and then to come back like that, the belief that would have given the squad. For the second part of the season would have been incredible.
Roy Keane comes in.
Lovely stuff.
Dion Dublin comes in.
Yes.
The Dube.
Yeah, the Dube.
Available on Amazon, I believe.
The Dube.
You never heard of the Dube?
No.
Has nobody here heard of the Dube?
No.
He created a musical instrument.
That's right, he did.
I don't know what it is, and I've no intention of buying one, but...
That's true, he did, he created a musical instrument.
No, I remember reading about that, and immediately cast it from
behind. You look very nonplussed by that information.
So Celtic are 7 points clear. We're out the Champions League, so we're desperate for trophies. So we're going to the assessment.
Right now that the Champions League's gone, yeah.
Trophy daft.
So we go into the Scottish Cup, and we're drawn with Clyde.
Easy.
We're probably through. So we're drawn with Clyde, and look, we're going to watch the highlights here just for another little reminder. We're going to do this maybe two or three more times, because the thing about this timeline, there's not that many highlights. We just workmanlike to get into a position, and then, you know, we're out the Euro Champions League, focused on the league. We get to the league. We're at the League Cup semi-final currently. This is how the Scottish Cup turned out.
Would you take that now? Sorry, just before. Would you take that now, you know, just trashing through games, winning ugly, but winning trophies? So the league in the double this year on the basis of just... grinding out week on week. Would you take that?
Where we are in terms of close to something monumental and historical, aye.
Yeah, absolutely.
But say in 3 years' time, would you take that?
No.
Right, okay.
Do you disagree?
No, I'm just curious to...
What about yourself, Sir Manager?
No, I would take it. But the priorities change after 10.
Yeah. I agree. We need to almost reset, I think, after we get it. So the signing of Roy Keane, we're signing the Manchester United mainstay, one of the kind of, you know, one of the biggest names of that United time in that period. So, Manny, your thoughts on signing Keane at the time?
Really excited. I mean, Keane had been saying for a long time that he wanted to play for Celtic. He was also saying that he didn't want to play for Celtic when he was done. He said he wanted to go there when he still had something to offer. Now, I assumed he did at that time, and I suppose he did. You know, we'll probably come to the game at Ibrox later on in the season when he was outstanding. He was still performing at a high level for Man United, and obviously the whole falling out with Ferguson, and then he comes up. I was ecstatic. I was really excited.
Yeah, Barry?
I think just what Samani's saying there, the fact that I remember Real Madrid and I think Juventus were in for him at this point as well. They were going to offer him a big contract to go there. But the pool of Celtic brought him to us, and I remember when he signed going up to see him.
Yeah. In your car.
In my car.
Alan, your thoughts?
Just unbelievable. I was a huge kind of fan. Roy Keane was probably, in terms of non-Celtic players, one of the first players that I really enjoyed watching. I loved everything about his attitude, his directness. People maybe have a slight, maybe younger people now, Roy Keane.
He's a bit of a caricature, like Sutton as well.
Yeah, he's very direct, but as a player, Roy Keane, I loved him. I absolutely adored the way he played, the way he led. He was incredible. And for that player to then, you know, thinking we might get 6 months or even maybe a year and a half out of him at that time was huge. And adding it into that Celtic team as well, I thought, this is great. You know, we're comfortable in the league and we're also adding a world-class midfielder. It was absolutely incredible. I think me and my dad went down to Celtic Park as well, because my dad's, Roy Keane was his absolute hero as a player. You know,
I was at uni as well, and I remember sitting, ditching class and sitting in a Wetherspoons, and it kind of coming up, breaking news, Roy Keane signs for Celtic, and like, because there'd been rumours, I always felt like he would give it the lip service about, I want to sign for Celtic, and then he would go to a bigger, you know, like a Juventus or whatever, because I remember that those rumours as well. But we genuinely been sort of, holy fuck, we've signed Roy Keane.
Yeah.
And feeling it was a massive statement of intent.
Yeah.
It was on, I remember when we signed him, it was on like the evening news, and you know, they've got absolutely no respect for Scottish football in terms of, I'm talking like the BBC, Nine O'Clock. Or whatever it was. I remember it being a big news story from going from Man United, being such an important part of their side to come to us. It was really made waves in world football at the time.
And what they talked about as well, everybody immediately, non-Celtic fans obviously mainly, but we're talking about, I wonder how much they're paying him. But actually, he wasn't anywhere near one of even the top paid players at Celtic.
And sorry to interrupt there, Alan, but I think that speaks about Roy Keane's character and personality. People have got different opinions on Roy Keane, but he said, I'm going to come to Celtic. He came to Celtic. And I imagine when he was negotiating, it was basically,
whatever.
You know, it wasn't about the money. It was about a personal ambition for him. And I think that was huge.
Definitely, when he had the offers on the table from Real Madrid and Juventus, it was either giving him
£100,000.
Probably more money than he was on at United. But yeah, the fact that he had this desire and he was a genuine Celtic fan.
And that's the thing. Like him or loathe him, he wanted to play in the hoops and he got that opportunity.
Well, come on, tell us about his debut. It must have been a fantastic affair.
So we're playing against Clyde in the Scottish Cup away from home. The team, that's the team is good. Boric, Telford, Dewey, McManus, Wallace, Nakamura, Lennon, Keane, Pearson, Hartson, Zarafsky comes on, Maloney. Some of the names, a lot of Tom Brighton, I remember he was a name. Craig Bryson, he had a decent career after that. Let's watch. Oh, it's the mad BBC One. I'm going to have to skip
through
this.
It's great that this game's going to be broadcast to a national audience. One guy screaming
at that was me.
I've played in that park many times.
Oh, it's almost a goal. Oh, fuck.
Oh, Jesus.
Fuck me.
Who was that?
Graham Roberts.
There he is.
The conductor.
Look at big Keno there. Seems to be going well. Oh, nope. Mislaid pass.
Oh, that was a warning sign.
We have to click through these bloody fucking highlights. Nakamura's got
clearly a Rangers fan that's uploaded this one, eh?
Naka's got a free kick here.
Not one of his best.
Okay, here's the goal. Just after the free kick. Dewey. Decent pass.
It's our pass.
Keen pass there. Oh, ball drops.
Yep.
Oh, Dewey has no idea what to do there. And he drops.
This is one that's chopped off. Yep. Aye. Because remember, they score twice and both of them get chopped off before they actually score.
Fuck's sake.
Jesus.
Do you just not remember this game?
I tried to edit it out of my mind.
Kenny Clark done as a solid there.
Dewey has no idea how that ball's bouncing.
What's that for? That is absolutely not a foul.
Nah, it's not a foul.
Jesus. This isn't on a plastic park either. I thought this would have been.
Right, sorry, just kicking through here. We are not playing well here, I'll be honest. Good save. This is the second disallowed goal.
Stephen Pearson showing a clean pair of heels there.
Oh, jeez, Celtic.
How did they get so many bites of that cherry?
He looked on.
Yeah, the other guy looked off. Very dramatic linesman, it has to be said as well.
I love the way this is a podcast and we're all doing this thing.
Eyes off. Mile off.
Okay, here's the actual goal.
There's another Clyde goal coming.
here's the actual goal.
Six now.
The actual goal. Okay.
Boric? I don't remember that.
Boric, what are you doing?
That was horrific.
Did we make Dewey the scapegoat when Boric had a shocker? Get him back, I'm forgiven.
What division were Clyde in at this time? Saying?
I'm not sure.
I'll check that in a second.
That's so bad.
That's so unlike him, isn't it?
What is Boric doing? Holy fuck. Ball comes in, Boric goes in, and then there's no one. Okay, they seem to be. There's Maloney. Oh, drop the shoulder, fantastic. Look at the pace of the wee man. Oh, and he goes. I love the way we're.
Sweat is absolutely lashing off
Nakira. Was that the. Watch.
This is Dewey here.
That was McManus.
Oh, that's God. A penalty. Oh yeah, that's right. Yeah. He looks like a deer caught in the headlights, doesn't he?
100%.
And this is just the headlight. This is just the McManus just falls, but
oh dear, yeah,
that's a penalty. Right, we'll just stop it there, right?
He really makes it obvious as well.
So yeah, just having watched those highlights, do you remember it like that, Chris?
Yeah. I also remember it being cold.
Aye.
It was January, so that would probably be the reason why, but...
Stacks up.
It was cold. It wasn't... It was almost a perfect storm of shit, basically. When you have the Art Media game, the Clyde game, they're kind of... Two huge disasters in Strachan's first season. Now, obviously, the way it panned out, we won the League Cup and the league, for those listening at home that may not know that. But that, being Keane's debut, the focus was on that as opposed to anything else. And it was just, everything just went wrong. And Alan was saying, obviously, the amount of the goals that they had chopped off before, we never learned our lesson. Sometimes you'll play badly, you'll concede, you'll do something stupid, and then you'll rally around and start to perform, but we just didn't. It was just awful.
Alan?
I remember it exactly like that. Calamitous. Two goals obviously chopped off, one of which entirely, it was offside, but just the defending was awful. Centre-halves at sea, Arthur was awful.
That was really bad.
Yeah, I mean, there was very little to really go on. And I think as well, when you look back and then obviously preparing for this, looking at what Strachan had said after as well.
Yeah, there's a lot.
He's pretty honest and he's pretty...
Clyde were the best team. They used the conditions well, played with common sense football, and we did not. Very hard to take everything just now, yeah.
When I read the quote about him saying about they played the conditions well, I assumed it was a plastic park, but it was just a bit of a... It's a bit of a heavy park, but beyond that, I don't know how you pinpoint that or how you, as a manager, pick players up after that, because that's...
Yeah, because Sirasky comes off the bench and scores. There's 6 minutes left. do you know what I mean? Like, you know, 6 minutes is a long time. But Barry, you know, it's Keane's debut, and it's just
just everything that could go wrong did go wrong. As Somani said, the warning signs were there, and Dubé was just.
He was out of his depth.
Out of his depth, and I said this, I think it was in Best of the Worst. He looks, sort of feel sorry for him, but then it's as if he's like, why am I here? Like, why have I been put through this? Like, he doesn't want to be there. And I think this, am I right in saying that, and I think in Roy Keane's book, he says, everybody in the dressing room is gutted. It was a terrible performance. And then they get on the bus, and Big John's eating a bag of, like, Walker's Chris or something, and he says, welcome to hell.
That's exactly it, yeah. Because that was one of the ones when the book was out, that was a quote that was kind of, you know, pretty quickly picked up on by the media, and they kind of ran with that. You can see, I mean, can you imagine driving it to Broadwood? Think of these guys you've got on there, Nakamura, Roy Keane, you know, even John Hartson, you know, you have got guys
international there, footballers,
and you just completely fold. Probably... Art Media, as Chris said earlier, was one of the worst performances in recent history. I really think this to me is worse than Cali Thistle under Barnes.
That's what I was going to say. I was literally going to say that. Would you say it's worse than Cali Thistle? This could have got another manager their jottles.
I don't know. I think in terms of the Cali Thistle result, I suppose the ramifications of that changed the club in terms of where we went. I don't know if this was as a standalone performance. Maybe.
Aye. So we're out of the cup, and Keane, obviously baptism of fire, welcome to hell and all that. But the rest of January, it's just we beat Kilmarnock 4-2. We destroy Motherwell 3-1 at Fir Park, getting the kind of monkey off our back a little bit. Dundee United, we draw with them 3 each at home as well. So the end of January... 58 points. We're 8 points ahead of Hearts. Rangers have got 43 points. At this point, I think it's been around about this time is when Paul Le Guin's announced as the new manager. I wonder how that's going to work
out. It's not the biggest announcement, though, in that month. Because obviously, Caldwell, this lets us know that he'll be joining us in the summer. And he takes obviously a lot of flack from Hibs friends.
That's
from
right, he's got the rest of the season to go with that. Going into February,
Dewey out and Gary Caldwell in.
Yeah, that's it, you know. we play after obviously we're eliminated from the league, the Scottish Cup. So all we've got left is the league and the League Cup. So we play Motherwell in the League Cup semi final. Sean Maloney, do you remember this game?
Did this go to extra time?
No. Maloney scores in the 88th minute.
I remember Maloney's goal.
Yeah. Richie Foran scores after 8 minutes against Motherwell. Zarafsky scores an equaliser, and then Maloney scores in the last minute.
Richie Foran, the journeyman.
The journeyman. Yeah, in that Motherwell game previously when we dispatched them, Adam Virgo plays, and then he kind of forces his way into, plays a couple of games. He's playing in this game as a right back. Adam Virgo, Steve McManus, listen to this defence. Adam Virgo, Steve McManus, Stanislav Varga, and Mohamed Kamara.
Mo Kamara is standing out there.
He's standing out there.
Remember Adam Virgo, not to go back, but when we signed him, I think there's a quote from his previous manager saying, yeah, he's really good up front. He can also play right back, centre back, and anywhere in midfield. And I kind of just thought, you just put him anywhere.
Yeah.
That doesn't sound like a talented player. You know, you think of a Nakamura, a talented player, you put him where he's good. Virgo, just fuck him anywhere.
I've always said that. I mean, a utility player, utility player just said to me, exactly as you said, somebody that's shit in a lot of positions. I mean, apart from somebody like Luis Enrique or something like that, it's like, oh, he's a utility. Vidar Rice, that's who we were talking about when I said it the last time. Vidar is a utility man. What's his position? He can play badly anywhere you want.
Can you play there? Yes. Are you good there?
No, that's, you know, that's what we are. But anyway, so we get into the League Cup final. So League Cup final is on the back burner. We then, in February, we've got Falkirk, who we dispatch.
SWAT aside.
SWAT aside.
2-1 this season.
Dismiss.
A comfortable 2-1 victory.
And then the next two games, we're going to look at the Rangers game, but we beat Dunfermline 8-1 away from home with some monumental finishing of the highest order.
Get highlights up for both of them.
Yes.
Because there's not many more after that.
What I like about the 8-1 victory, just before we go into the goals, is I think it really gets retribution for when they stopped us from winning the league in 98.
Yes.
I think this exact moment, not any of the games before in this season, this game.
Craig Falconbridge, forever in, burned in my memory. So we go to Ibrox, the team that plays Boric in goals, Telfer, Baldy, McManus, Wilson. Mark Wilson comes in January. Petrov, Keane, Lennon, Maloney, Zaraski, Hartson. Dion Dublin actually comes on in the 74th minute. Stephen Pearson comes on in the 89th minute. This is the masterclass from Keane. So we're going to watch the highlights, but we'll also talk about how impressive Roy Keane was just individually.
Fucking goal.
Such Bob Malcolm. Bob Malcolm, Barry Ferguson, Buffel and Burke. Roy Keane and Neil Lennon. Northmen, Southmen.
Comrades.
Nice. Come into the... This was your derby memory.
What, yeah, terrible, can I just, what a horrible kickoff that is. Firing it right back in there.
And then tone it up the park.
Tone it up. John Hartson. Shaved head.
It's a muted Rangers fan display today.
Yeah, look at that long
Chris
hair.
Burke's lovely hair.
Boric.
Well held. He's learned from the Clyde game.
But yeah, you were at this game, Barry, yeah?
Yeah, uh-huh. Yep.
Great save.
I was going to ask the worst question ever there. I was going to say, did you enjoy it?
Look, yeah, at this, it's a goal.
Yeah,
what a finish.
Zaraski, that's right.
Well, blonde, this is when Magic was starting to come on a game, wasn't he?
There was a lot of blonde hair about that season.
Aye. All the launch highlights.
Peroxide sales through the roof.
It's about 10 years after Gaza and his do.
And 20 years after the 80s.
Lamal, yeah. And...
So we win this game and we go 21 points clear of Rangers.
That was close.
Yeah, 21 points clear. But the highlights was Roy Keane. Barry, you were there, so we'll get your thoughts. Roy Keane in that game.
A sort of midfield masterclass. And Manny spoke earlier about whether we were going to get Roy Keane at his best. And I think this sort of allayed all the fears that after the Clyde game, Roy Keane was still very much a top-class footballer. Him and Lennon together, just sort of protecting the back four. And then there's a sort of famous moment where Purcell's sort of running down on the Celtic defence and Keane just...
Cynically
takes the foul. Just using all of his...
Experience.
And,
Alan's loving it. No, scum.
It's great. Like, the Celtic end that day cheered that like a goal. It just felt that good that... Most of us can remember times when they would try and bully us and Keane just wasn't having any. It was just like, have that, take the book and...
Yeah, very just, you know, masterclass. You remember that, Chris?
Yeah, I remember, obviously, Keane was up against Ferguson. Now, I know Alan will give nothing. Nothing to him.
Certainly not Barry Ferguson, if that's where you're going.
No, I'm not actually going there. But Eric, what I'm going there is the press had Barry Ferguson as being a player who could handle himself at the top level in the Premier League. Now that's the way they viewed Ferguson, as being a real top quality midfielder. He was made to look stupid that day.
He was in chasing shadows.
He couldn't get near Keane. And this is a Keane who, remember, he retired at the end of this season. It wasn't like, now as Barry said, we got this performance out of him, but we didn't get vintage Roy Keane over his period there. But
we just needed that one, though.
Yeah. That's exactly... This is it. This is what everybody loves about Roy Keane at Celtic. This moment, this game. He went there and he totally bossed. Whatever we paid him was worth it for this. Ferguson couldn't get near him. He couldn't get near him. However good a player he was, it showed you how far short he was of somebody like Roy Keane. And it was just brilliant to watch.
Alan?
the guys are absolutely spot on. First of all, Barry, I really enjoyed when you were talking about when he cynically brought down Puzzle. Just, it was nice hearing that. It was a lovely moment.
Jesus.
but over and above that, what Chris is saying is absolutely right. The way I always describe this after, you know, the game, and you talk about it and you reflect back, it looked like Roy Keane was playing the game like at slow motion, because he was just ahead of everything. Obviously, I think he was about 34 at this time.
Yeah.
But the way he played, you could just see...
Rolling back the years.
He just understood how to do it. He looked head and shoulders above every other player in the park. And really, it was like, it was just so comfortable and so easy for him. And it was masterful. His use of the ball, the way he moved the ball, so simple, but so effective. It was one of the best performances, really most mature performances from a Celtic player at Ibrox, and there's been some great ones over the years, but obviously a great one in its own, Zaravski getting the goal, but Roy Keane, this is the Roy Keane game.
Yeah, and that is it.
See, talking about Keane, and I suppose the standards he sets himself, and I mean, we're all quite clearly Roy Keane fans here, but there's a lot of folk out there that don't like Roy Keane in terms of his abrasive manner and all that sort of stuff. But I think it speaks volumes about Keane that he retired at the end of that season. I think he still could have performed at a very high level for us, but I don't think it was enough for him.
Yeah.
And that's why he decided to kind of hang the boots up at the end of the season. From a personal point of view, I'd have liked to have seen him another year maybe at Celtic, just to see, enjoy him playing for Celtic. But that game, that's it. I mean, you just always think back in that. You talk about the 1-0 game where Zaravski scored, you don't think about that. You just think about how Roy Keane, strutted about the pitch that day.
Like a peacock. Terrific. The game after that is the... He was like a peacock.
Yep, he was. Exactly like a peacock.
The game after that, obviously, the Dunfermline game where we rattled them 8-1. So the lineup, before we kind of look at it, Boric, Telfer, Baldy, McManus, Wilson. That seems to be the defence kind of post-New Year. Petrov, Lennon, Keane. Maloney, Hartson and Zaravski. It's almost like it's basically a 4-3-3 with Maloney and Zaravski each side of Hartson. You could also say it's a 4-4-2. But Petrov gets 3 goals, Hartson, Zaravski gets 3 goals, and Zaravski gets 4 goals. Right, we're going to watch it now. So the highlights coming up. This strip is absolutely honking. Wilson.
Both footed. Comfortable either side.
Stan Petrov. It's a great ball,
I liked it that you could call Petrov Stan the Man. Simple but effective.
Such a weirdo one sometimes. So Celtic take the lead 1-0. Boric flapping at it. It turns out Boric was shit.
The years have been kind to him.
Yeah, it really has.
It's a revelation.
It's amazing. He's the confidence gives you with Boric at the back. Says aye.
Just total lies. Look, what's he called?
He tries to get it in the way back as well. Watch.
Absolutely honking.
Do you have voice then, Chris? Whoa.
That, was, yeah.
That works perfectly in that scenario.
Yeah, I hear that on Keno, the Keno first time. Touch for Petrov. Zaravski. Hartson. Back into back.
Ian John was great this year.
Ian Westwater could have saved that, I think.
It's not Ian Westwater, is it?
No.
Okay, now.
Of course it's not.
Okay, now. Good save. Aye, John Hartson scores 30 goals this season. Oh, we'll tally up all the goals at the end.
Standard McManus.
Oh, aye. Pinpoint.
Hartson holding up play, brilliant. Zaravski.
That's a good finish.
Strike, I remember
great
that.
Finish, right?
Terrific. I think from around about December time, he really started rattling the goals in, Zaravski.
Did he get 20 odd?
He gets 20, yeah.
20, yeah.
What they talked about as well, I can't remember who it was again, but Zaravski was the quickest player at the club.
Oh, right.
Lightning quick.
Yeah. His injury would take care of that. Don't you worry about that. Ligament injury.
Terrible chant.
What?
I liked it.
Oh, magic. It's point. Just his name. And it is just to the point. Very good, Barry.
This is before the invention. No foreplay here. Just
straight in.
Straight in. There's Big Mason there. Used to play for Man City.
Here he goes. He's going to do it again.
Big Mick.
Toe.
That's why he would.
Jesus, how is he not offside?
Great finish.
Ach, I just feel like I'm getting a bit bored watching Zarafsky score loads of goals.
Great touch.
Oh, here we go. Here we go.
Oh, lovely.
Did I miss the?
No.
Is this the Maloney goal?
No.
That should be the winning one, though.
No.
We just
watched it. That was his third. That was the hat trick. So yeah. He's. So yeah.
Oh, here we go. I hate that strip.
What a strip.
That's unbelievable.
Volley. Basically.
I didn't realise from how far out it was. Outside the box. Oh, edge of the box.
That's incredible.
Yep.
His technique was superb.
You'd be gutted if you were a Zarafsky scoring four and then Maloney does that, wouldn't you?
That's only what you remember.
And Lennon's trundler. That was a great strike.
And Lennon scores, did you say?
Yeah, here it is.
You can hear the crowd getting excited.
Oh, goalkeeper.
Oh, Strang looks delighted. Really pleased for Lenny. Awful goalkeeper.
Awful goalkeeper.
Awful goalkeeper.
Oh, here we go, Mick.
Right up.
Oh.
Get it up there.
They've all got their two assists at least. Ah, that's a good
nice finish.
Good finish again.
Is that the last goal? 8-1, yeah.
Yep.
So 8 goals, terrific, unbelievable technique from Maloney for that one. 4 goals for Zarafsky. Hartson and Zarafsky are really starting to rattle the goal. They've been rattling the goals in since, you know, Zarafsky since the turn of the year, but Hartson all season. This is Hartson's best season, potential from a personal point of view.
Yeah, and again, Hartson's somebody you automatically associate with
the
O'Neill era. You know, you don't... my memory didn't... Didn't automatically link Hartson being so strong for us this season to, you know.
Do you think it was maybe because in the new years he had to share the burden, well, not the burden, but the limelight with Larson and Sutton, and the fact that Sutton was sort of phased out, Larson had gone a couple of years, he was seen as the main man. That
might very, very well have been the reason why, but for some reason I didn't associate Stratton with Hartson. All the O'Neill era players in my mind were not bit part players, but less, their powers were lessened, if you will.
Ah, 100%.
I think what you notice as well about this time is that we play off Hartson a lot. It's not just his goals.
It's like a focal point.
It was just exceptional this year. I really, you know, looking back at it, he's involved in pretty much everything that's good about this season. Mm-hmm. And I think he gets his DVD the end of this season or the next, maybe.
You love a DVD.
The Dragon.
Is that what it was called?
It wasn't the Welsh Dragon, maybe Celtic Dragon or something.
The Celtic.
Is a good one?
Yeah. So we beat Dunfermline 8-1 at East End Park. So at the end of February, and this is the thing, end of February, we've got 67 points. Hearts are in second with 54. So, I mean, league's won.
Have we let them win it? Tynecastle at this stage yet?
No, not yet. Rangers are on 46, 56, 66, so it's 24 points we're ahead of Rangers.
I remember, you know, obviously Hearts finishing second this season. Do you remember the banner at Ibrox that they put up? Finishing second isn't good enough, but it is a must.
That's right,
beautiful.
It's... didn't harm.
Yeah.
Is that an actual banner?
I remember that.
Behind the goals, wasn't it?
We demand second.
In March, we beat Aberdeen 3-0 at home. We beat Hibernian 2-1 away. So we're in the League Cup final. The team, again, as you'd expect, actually, no, Ross Wallace comes in again. I didn't realise Ross Wallace played so many games this season.
Necessity.
Paul Telfer, Ross Wallace at fullback, Baldy, McManus. Then ahead of them, it's Petrov and Lennon, Nakamura and Maloney. Zarafsky's up front on his own with Roy Keane because John Hartson got injured. So John Hartson didn't play in this game. Dion Dublin was on the bench. Finished 3-0 to Celtic. We are going to watch the highlights. Let's watch and enjoy. Here we go.
Good 2-minute video. So
yep.
And it's American commentator Danny McGrill.
So, the minutes applause here for
yeah. So
Jimmy
this
Johnson.
Is for Jimmy Johnson, who sadly passed away. The best player Celtic have ever had. So
well, there's Rod Stewart, blonde hair.
Oh, corners Nick Gamora.
I would rather
someone
watch,
in front.
I would rather watch this commentary than listen to a number of Scottish commentators. If I'm being honest.
Yep. Oh, they're off the side now.
Chance.
Archer Boric.
Nakamura.
I like the way he said Nakamura.
I don't think
Nakamura.
I liked how he said that, though.
Nakamura.
Just can't fucking...
McGregor.
Definitely a libel coming when we talk about...
Yeah, he's made up for himself. He's made up for himself. I'll say it.
Do you know... I never realised that.
Was he, hopefully he was in for 8-1.
Oh, fantastic.
Oh, no.
No. Roy Keane's went off. Are you okay?
Sweet footwork. Yeah, wow.
Sweet footwork.
Dion Dublin, man.
No. Big fan of Dion.
Great balance.
Oh.
We've not mentioned Stan a lot. He's been this season exceptional.
Yes.
Oh, lovely free kick.
Love a free kick in a cup final. Absolutely mm-hmm. love it.
Well done, Sean. Well done, Sean, son.
Why did he hit that and not Nakamura?
He scored.
Yes.
Lovely. He deserved that.
That's another one. I should just explain as well. McGregor rooted to the spot.
Rooted.
The only medal his career, I believe. What about Dion?
We do the double this season, essentially. It's just, it's not the Scottish Cup, it's the League
it's
Cup.
It's a double, not the
it's
double.
It's a double, not the double. But comprehensively, dispatch. Dunfermline.
Swept aside.
Swept aside. And I remember being at that game and just, it was very, the atmosphere was very relaxed. It was a cup final where I think we just kind of knew we were going to win.
I always find the League Cup final tends to be like that. It's great winning trophies, but it's not the Scottish Cup.
Unless we're playing them in the League Cup. Yeah. It's not. It's never been a trophy historically that's been kind to us. It's, you know, we'd barely won it, although in the more recent years it seems to be we've picked it up. But I've not really got much of an affinity for it.
I'm the same.
I think the fact that the finals are always a Sunday as well kind of lessens it as well.
Exactly.
My favourite one just off the bat, 2000, CIS Cup final.
O'Neill's first trophy.
Yeah, I loved that. That was nice. I was a big fan of that. Yep, that one.
Yeah, I've got it on the wall.
Retained it because we won it the season before.
That's right, yeah.
Coca-Cola Cup.
So,
just saying things now.
Yeah, just words.
Rumbelows Cup.
Rumbelows.
The Milk Cup.
The Skull Cup. Is it the Skull's Cup?
Skull Cup,
yeah.
That's right. 10-6. So we won the League Cup. That was on the Sunday, the 19th of March. We then go on and beat Inverness at home 2-1, and we beat Livingston 2-0. So we end March 79 points. Hearts have got 62. Rangers have got 56. Ha ha. So then again, all we've got left is just league games. So we beat Hearts. We beat Kilmarnock. We play Coventry City in a final, in a friendly.
Richard Shaw's testimonial.
Wow, you knew that, like.
Well done, Richard. You deserve everything. Testimonial, not his funeral.
We lost 3-1 in that game.
Do you know, see if you let standards slip. This is exactly what happens.
He threw it.
Aye.
Ex-Coventry manager, threw the game.
Threw Paul Telfer. John Hartson.
That's a stitch up.
Dion Dublin.
Oh. There's a real Coventry link there, isn't there?
Yeah, yes. Then we play Hibs and at home, one each. Then we play Rangers, 23rd of April. Finishes 0-0. Do you remember that game?
No.
Barry?
I do, and I remember, I think this might have been a game that Sir Alex was at, and he said, apparently he said to whoever was beside that he knew that at that point that Roy Keane was done. Like, obviously, he'd left, let him leave Man United, but he thought that at that point that Roy Keane, his career as a high-level footballer was done.
Do you get the impression, though, that Sir Alex probably had been saying that for like a decade because he absolutely despised him.
Yeah, listen, I don't know. This is a bit of a hot take. I don't think they like each other. So I'm not sure I would believe what either of them say.
So this is a Boric in goals, Varga, McManus, Telfer, Wilson, Petrov, Lennon, Keane, Maloney, Hartz and Zarafsky. Just a sort of nothing game. We'd already won the league. The league was won.
The only thing that gets me though is at this time, having won the league, obviously get the context, and it would have been very, very fresh in the memory the season before. You really want to stick the boot in.
Aye.
I'm a huge fan of sticking the boot in.
We stick the boot in next week.
Yeah.
By losing 3-0 to Hearts.
It's more just...
what a day.
My favourite Celtic defeat.
It's disappointing. Don't get me wrong, it's a great season, and you know, it's a 0-0, it's not it, but it would be nice if, you know, we've had a couple of opportunities over the year to either win the league. Obviously we had a huge chance to win the league at Ibrox a couple of years back, we didn't. We've done it at Celtic Park once, but this would have been nice. You know, I think this would have, in terms of endearing Strachan, see if you go out and really thrash them, that would be great. We didn't though.
Yeah, we didn't. So we beat Rangers. We draw 0-0 with Rangers, and then we go to Tynecastle and we lose 3-0. We're not trying particularly hard, because at the end of April, Hearts are 4 points ahead of Rangers, and you know, it's kind of touch and go for who's going to finish second. But it's funny because, as I say, like when we start moving, then like all bets are off. You know, Hearts self-destruct. Rangers are never in it. Rangers in this season actually get to the last 16 of the Champions League, which is fucking bizarre. They get the same group as Armenia Bratislava. They qualify in the last 16 of the Champions League with 7 points. If you think about all the time, Martin O'Neill's team got at least 9. You know, and we just, you know, just luck of the fucking draw. But
and then Villarreal put them out.
Villarreal put them out on away goals, though. Not even, they don't even...
So what we're saying is, Rangers... were cheated out of a Champions League victory that season. They were that close to it. Really.
So close.
Lines
far away.
So we win the league pretty early, though. I think as we said there, I think the Hearts game at the 1st of January, where we come back 2-0 down, is the day. We obviously don't win it, but it's the day that we fucking win it. Because we're just, John Hartson's rattling the goals in, and we're fantastically well. We play, there's 2 games left in the season, and we beat Kelly 2-0 at home, and we draw with Aberdeen 2-2. So the league finishes, Celtic as champions, 91 points, qualifying for the Champions League group stages automatically.
Thank the Lord.
Heart of Midlothian qualify for the Champions League second qualifying stage. So Rangers finish with 73 points, Hearts have got 74, we finish with 91. We only lose 3 games all season, and one of them is against Hearts, one of them is against Rangers, and one of them is against Dunfermline. That Dunfermline result really was a sort of freak result. We draw 7 games, 4, 93 goals for, 37 goals against. We win the League Cup. We're out the Scottish Cup against Clyde, and we don't qualify outside of the Champions League qualification groups. Sean Maloney gets the Scottish Players Award. Of course, a Celtic player doesn't get the actual award. That goes to Greg Gordon. Maloney wins the player. Sorry?
Not then, but he's a Celtic player now, so we can claim it.
In terms of goal scorers, I'm going to talk through. Zarafsky scored 20 goals. Hartson scored 20 goals. Maloney scored 16. Fucking hell. Mm-hmm. Petrov get 10. McManus get 8. Beattie get 7. Nakamura get 6. McGeady get 4. And then a lot of players get one or two goals. Zarafsky scored 20 goals in... 16 in the league, 3 in the League Cup, 1 in the Scottish Cup. Hartson get 18 league goals, 1 in the Scottish Cup. This is a, you know, as I say, we look at seasons in terms of, you know, doing timelines where a lot of stuff happened, or, you know, very important seasons. Where does this season rank for you, Chris?
In its importance? Not that highly. I think it was important to win the league after what happened the season beforehand. But Strachan's home tenure, I suppose, we talked about Stratton at the start of the podcast, and the reason that we picked this is because it was his first season. Strachan's tenure as a whole doesn't really hold that many fond memories for me. Now, okay, the season we won the league for Tommy, if you will, when he passed away, the end of the season was really good. But when I hear Strachan's name linked with a Celtic job, I hear you mentioned it, it was just workmanlike, it was plodding. There was never, you know, obviously there was moments in there, but it just, there's been so many other seasons that meant more than any of the ones that he had, really. It just evokes blandness, really.
Alan?
This season, I would probably be inclined to agree with that. Not Strachan's time as a whole. The next season, I have really, really fond memories of that season, domestically and obviously in Europe, and we'll look at that sometime again. But this season, I think it's important to win the league. After having an incredible manager like Martin O'Neill, it was really important we won the league, and we did that, and there were some great moments in this season, you know, some really good performances, but it was performances from players who would then ultimately depart. Stylian Petrov, John Hartson.
Yeah, that's a good point. But Mazeraski never recovered from his injury. So Maloney leaves as well.
It is a huge turnover, and this is when we kind of shift to, this is the last, if I had to pick a season of a kind of dividing line between the O'Neill years and moving forward, it's after this season. The O'Neill years for me really end in Strachan's first season, because the real impact the players had, and then we moved on into what I kind of think of as the really modern Celtic era. But it was great. It was great to win the league, and Shunsuke Nakamura and Stan Petrov and John Hartson this season were just, I thought, phenomenal.
Barry?
That's it.
Yeah, just similar to what the guys have said. It was important after the horrible way to lose the league the year before. But I'm the same as Sir Manny. I don't look back too fondly. And it seems weird to say that, because he did win three in a row for us. But I think,
I don't like him.
No, I don't like him either. And I knew you were the same guy, but I loved Martin O'Neill. Like, he's been my favourite Celtic manager of my lifetime. And I think anyone was going to be on a hiding to nothing with me personally after O'Neill. And some people have the argument, oh, Strachan was more successful. But I think the way that O'Neill restored our pride domestically, came to put Rangers in their place, as he said, and also given us a European pedigree again.
I don't think O'Neill could have done, I don't think Strachan could have done what O'Neill did, but I think O'Neill could have done what Strachan did.
And that sums it up perfectly for me.
See, when I say I don't like Strachan, I just think what he went on to do, like, it's just a personality clash. I don't like his personality. I don't like how he comes across. Towards the really turgid years with Strachan, after a game, he'd always go, what a terrific advert for Scottish football. That was great. That was a great watch. And it's like, mate, I just watched the 90 minutes of it and it was crap.
Strachan's, I mean, what I'd spoke about earlier, and Alan disagreed, I suppose. I mean, in terms of Strachan's reign was made up of highlights, moments, as opposed to his run as a whole being good, if you know what I mean. I don't know if that makes sense. There were some great moments. The Champions League, you know, Nakamura's free kick, the last 16. Even I was in the San Siro and we got put out from Kaká. You know, getting that far and being that close. The two games against Rangers when we beat them in the last day of the season. But as a reign, there was so much turgid football in there. And just him, you know, the quips you do, you drop points at home to, I don't know, Hibs or something like that, and a needless one each draw, and he's telling you it was a cracking game of football.
You should be happy you saw something that was great.
You don't want to hear that, you know. So I'm with Barry. He's just a guy who, I wouldn't say I dislike him even, I just didn't properly take to him.
That's probably the better. Yeah.
I suppose that'll be the way I'll feel about him.
I don't dislike him as a person or anything. I didn't take to him as the Celtic manager. I certainly didn't take to him as a Scotland manager. But he won titles, and that should always be respected. He had a hard job in his hand coming in this season. Highlights for me would be Nakamura. Absolute shining light in what he'd go on to do. Zarafsky was very much just post Christmas a machine. There are some highlights, but you know, Roy Keane coming in is kind of you know, masterful performance at Ibrox, and that's all we ever really wanted. But this season as a whole, I think, is like a bridging season. As Alan says, it's like a bridging season from one to another. I don't know too many managers that would survive, however, Bratislava and Clyde.
Within the same six months.
Yeah, that's...
It's a fair point.
And I suppose in terms of... You look at how easy it was for us to win the league, if we're being honest. The amount of points we won it by. But the season is totally punctuated by those two results, and those two results stick far more in the mind than
winning the league by anything else points,
that season.
There's also just, almost as an aside, there's one last wee thing that I think is important in terms of modern Celtic. The way that Gordon Strachan's appointed tells us a lot about the influence and how decisions are made at Celtic. It's made by, you know, a recommendation directly from Dermot Desmond on a kind of chance meeting, if you will. And I think just in terms of giving you a wee insight as to how Celtic operate and work, I think that's quite, I think it's quite interesting. And I found it interesting when Gordon Strachan tells the story. It's so casual, and then it just kind of happens. We need a manager, Dermot Desmond, met this guy, go for it. And it worked out well, there's no question of that. But I think it's quite an interesting wee insight. It's an interesting insight into how decisions are made and where the kind of power lies at Celtic ultimately.
Yeah, and as we'd find out recently, things don't seem to have changed, do they?
No, the power structure
is just a, do you think he could do it? Sort of discussion between the board members and offering him the job there, rather than being progressive. And we seem to, in recent years of since then, like opened our sort of scouting network and finding gems, but for the manager position, we seem to be a sort of closed shop. I know Ronnie Dyla was different, but it's more or less just who the board want, go and get him, rather than...
I think Ronnie Dyla was a case of Roy Keane has fallen.
Yeah.
Roy Keane was the target, very similarly, but he's not taking it. Who else can we get? We'll just go with the guy who was going to be his assistant. Anyway, listen, this has been Timeline Celtic 2005-2006. This is going to be an evolving sort of feature that we do. We're going to look to interact in a different way with the patrons, but also we're going to be looking to producing it a little bit differently. So this is kind of a caught in between, caught in the middle of moving forward and doing it the old way. But we've got lots of features coming up as well. Pleasure as always. This has been a double, not the double, winning season, 2005-2006. Some highlights, some lowlights, but ultimately a time where Celtic, you know, start one of three titles that they win in a row. Chris Armani, pleasure as always, sir.
Terrific, thank you.
Alan Edgar, sir.
Thank you very much.
Barry Gallagher.
Cheers, thank you.
I'm Chris Gallagher, and this has been Timeline Celtic 2005-2006.